Comic Conversations.
It's awesome.
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony
Steele. No, I'm taking it back.
And Alex.
I'm dancing. He does that. He's as quick as a cat, and he hits him with a bat.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to Comic Conversations, the podcast that reviews more comics than anybody else. Episode 187, where we talk all things comics for the week of April. This can't be right. Oh yeah. All things comics for the week of March 29th, 2017.
You fail at dates.
I have 3/9/17 written down. I'm like, what does that mean?
You need more weight.
Alex, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very good.
Top guys coming through, right?
Sure, I haven't watched Raw yet. Because I knew Nakamura wasn't going to be on, so I'm like, I ain't going to watch that shit. I'll watch it later for the revival. The top guys.
Coming through.
They go hard.
All day and night.
Say yeah.
Oh,
by the
God,
way, everyone, WrestleMania was shit.
What's that?
WrestleMania was shit, and I didn't even see the finish to Roman Taker because the match was crap.
It was really bad.
So I didn't care that Roman won because I didn't watch it.
Because the show went up for 5 hours?
5 hours, dude. That show, I'm fucking watching it. I'm like, this is the longest goddamn show I've ever seen. It's been on for like 12 hours, and I didn't even watch the pre-show. What were they thinking?
Well, they've been pushing it every single year. Wasn't it 5 hours last year, or was it four? I can't even remember now.
I don't know, but it was really
long. Well, I think
long.
This is the year
somebody on the board said that it's always, like, it's been that long for a while. It's just this year, a lot of the matches were not great, so
it felt
longer.
Yeah, when a show's really good, it doesn't help that it's really long. Like, if we ever put on a 5 hour show, I'm sure folks wouldn't be complaining.
What? No, we're not that good. Our show's already too long. It's just I want to read so many comics. And our listeners bear the pain.
Well, to be fair, that also makes us different, too. Because there's plenty of comic book podcasts out there, but nobody else reviews quite as many books as we do.
No, but some of them review fewer books in more detail.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
the trade-off.
That's the trade-off. Yeah, we're going for quantity, not quality.
Hey, it takes all kinds, right?
Well, if the more books I read, the more books I find that are either really good or really bad.
Yeah, because there'll be books, especially books that we've read that I'm usually more excited for, and I read the book, and especially this week, I was like, this didn't do that much for me. And then when I read stuff that I normally don't care for, or especially this week, new stuff, I was like, okay, that's good. It finds a way to balance itself every single week because we diversify.
I was going to say, spoilers, I liked some stuff this week. Yeah.
All right, but before we go into this week's reviews, we have to go into this week's comic book news.
There ain't no mistaking though. Run and tell the chosen. Find the wolf and the crow. Cause the edge is to the end.
That is from The End Men. It is, oddly enough, here's the comic connection. The song is called East to West. And for you East to West readers, it, of course, makes several references to the story. Yes, you deserve. All right. With that out of the way, let's go into our first news story. First of all, let's open up with a retraction. Last week on our news story, I said that Axel Alonso had said that there had been a bit of Marvel fatigue at Marvel. Or event fatigue, I should say. The man who quoted that would be Marvel's VP sales, David Gabriel, who also...
And I should have caught that.
Well, the thing is, I also read another story from Axel Alonso, so I think that's why I superimposed and made that connection.
Yeah, but my thing was I knew it was like a retailer's summit,
mm-hmm.
and they wouldn't be like the editor in chief at Marvel.
Yeah, exactly.
For that. So that was my bad that I didn't call you out on that.
But these days, David Gabriel is actually a very popular person. Over between our last show, he had a bit of a statement for everybody. There was a Marvel retreat, and among other things, they talked about, diversity and females in the Marvel books.
Yeah, so I don't know if he mischose his, he basically said, you know, with Marvel, what was it? Was it Marvel Now 2? Was that what
Marvel
it was
Now
called?
2.0, yes.
Yeah, sales have been down and it hasn't been impressive. And I think what he actually said was something effective. The diversity thing didn't work. Or comic fans don't want diversity.
Here's the thing. I've heard that thing sort of anecdotally a lot, like especially on the internet, but you're always going to hear things here and there. But there has been a bit of a backlash, the idea of them going so hard with the minority characters and the female characters. I'm not saying that you can't do it, but they've really gone overboard with it. I mean, the worst example of that we were talking about, I think last month with the America Chavez book. Like that's an example of complete overkill. It's like,
Here's the deal with this, because I kind of have a lot to say about this. Number one, the internet exploded. Called him an asshole, called him a misogynist, called him a racist.
The thing I found funny about that, I'm sure most of those folks that said that probably
don't buy the comics.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the fucking issue. I've been on about this before. You motherfuckers bitch and complain and cry, and I look at these fucking books, and some of them are selling 9,000 copies a month. That's pathetic. That is pathetic. That is sub-Avatar numbers. And it's a fucking Marvel book that they promoted. You told them you wanted this, and then you refused to buy it. This is your fault. In defense of fans who don't buy these books, why does anybody care about America Chavez?
That's the one that's going to be the whipping girl of sorts. Cause that's the most egregious one, I feel. That's the one where there's no reason to care about her. She doesn't have a personality. I'm sure
she does in Ultimate.
To a degree. Like her thing is pretty much she doesn't much care for Captain Marvel and she's taken the team by the horns and done progressive stuff.
She's kind of a badass though. She has leadership qualities. She has some character traits in that. In her own book, her character traits were she was gay. I buried it on the show because of this. She had no character.
Mm-hmm.
She's gay and she's brown. And that's why she has a book. And Marvel, if anybody wants to get upset with me over that, number one, that book is going to get canceled. Number two, you didn't fucking buy it.
Number three, catch you outside. How about that?
Yeah, just fuck catch me outside. I don't give a fuck. I'm sick of this bullshit. It's, Spider-Woman is getting canceled. Yeah, you know what? Spider-Woman was a great book. You didn't buy it.
Oh, my favorite was
going to get canceled again. Yeah, Miss Marvel, it's a pretty good book. You didn't buy it.
Yeah. My favorite is our old co-host, Dave, who notoriously stole comic books, and then he would complain when books like Vision went away. He's like, well, you never bought any, so.
Well, Vision was always going to be a 12 issue.
Okay, maybe that's a back exception. A Howard the Duck.
Yes, he did complain about Howard the Duck while never buying it. That is true. But the thing is, it's just these people get on and complain. It's like, you didn't fucking buy it. You didn't buy it. You asked for these things and then didn't buy it. And Marvel, in their desire to give you these things, gave you these things with no forethought. Riri Williams.
That's another one that we saw coming from a mile away. I mean, it was one of these things to where nobody wanted it. And more importantly, we predicted in about a year or so, they'd go back to Tony Stark being Iron Man. It's like, why did you even bother then? It's like,
they never got rid of Iron Man. He's still alive.
Yeah.
Like, you can't. Fucking Miles Morales is doing all right. He's selling, even though Bendis is writing his book, it's selling much worse than Amazing Spider-Man because Miles Morales is called Spider-Man, but the quote real Spider-Man is still in the books.
Mm-hmm.
That's an even worse example. Fucking Mosaic, the Inhuman. You can paint that a couple ways. Number one, it was a fucking, like, Barnes & Noble exclusive.
Well, I think, because I regularly go to comic book stores, I think they long since given up on that. I think at the beginning that was supposed to be a graphic novel character for Barnes & Noble, and I think they very quickly gave that up, because I've been to comic book
stores. No, it was gonna come out there first.
Oh, okay.
And then later be released in comic shops. And you could say that's because fucking, you know, the Inhumans don't draw.
Mm-hmm.
but also, and another thing is, who are the fucking names on these books? Like, yeah, you got Bendis on a couple of the books. Like, Jessica Jones is selling, like, what, 15,000 copies?
It's funny you bring that up as well, because part of the Gizmodo article that I'm sure nobody read, part of what Marvel was talking about was there seems to be a problem with talent management. We're talking about, you know, big names that come into Marvel, and then, you know, they do a couple of books, and then they leave to do their own creators' own stuff at Image. And it's like,
yep.
There's been a brain drain for quite a while.
I mean, look at who they've had and lost. They're losing Lemire. They lost Brubaker. They lost Rucka. Hickman left. I mean, they didn't really lose Hickman. He just decided to leave. He did his big run, so I actually understand him taking a break. They lost Remainder. They've lost so many fucking writers.
Some of these writers, like Fraction, they ran off.
Yeah, well, they got pissed off with various things Marvel was doing, and they left. This happened to DC during the New 52. They were losing people. But now Marvel's losing them. The same thing. If I had to take a guess, I'd say writers are fucking sick of these constant relaunches. They're sick of these events fucking up their stories. Because it's so fucking common, and DC has shown a shit ton of restraint in that.
And as long as we're talking relaunches, something that was interesting, some of the people at Marvel were complaining how the issue one sold really good. But the thing is, once they get to like issue 14, 15, there's nothing they can do. Oddly enough, for number 25 of Amazing Spider-Man, you know, big deal. It's number 25, it's not that real big deal. Bucks. They cranked that bad boy up to $9.99, $10. And you know what? It tripled sales.
Yeah.
So you can do other gimmicks besides number ones to pop sales.
But again, I want to point out, as I said was going to happen, is now borne out. When you do a relaunch every year, the number one consecutively sells less and less than the last number one.
Mm-hmm.
Because people have realized, oh, a number one really is meaningless now. Oftentimes, they don't even give a new creative team. They keep the same fucking creative.
Yeah, and sometimes, okay, I understand doing that because maybe you want to wrap up storylines and let someone jump in with the new storyline. Sometimes they don't even do that. Sometimes they literally pick up from the last story arc right in the middle of it, and they just have a one on it, even though numerically, like, I know I picked up a couple of issues where it's still called, like, issue 15, but it says so-and-so story part one. Because they gotta stick the one on there, which, honestly, if that's the way they want to go, I'm kind of cool with it, because it's like, it's the best of both worlds, where you don't do the renumbering, but at the same time, you get a new arc and a new jumping on point. If anything, that seems, I think that should be the model going forward.
Well, it's, Marvel's idea was, they're like, we want it to be like seasons of TV shows. But the thing is, that's bullshit. Like, seasons of TV shows are because TV shows have an off season.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they take time to film, and then the season ends, and then they do another season. Marvel doesn't do that. The books come out every fucking month. So you're taking a month break, which you're already waiting a month between issues. You're putting the book back out. You're continuing all the storylines. It's a new number one. But people know this isn't actually a jumping on point now.
Yeah.
So they don't fall for it.
And I used to like the relaunches, and I'm speaking as someone who really thought they were great. They were a great way to shake up things that were getting a little stale, but they don't really shake up anything anymore. You said it perfectly. Creatively, they don't shake things up. Maybe they'll do hit things here and there to maybe kind of cosmetically change things, but they don't really change anything when they do a relaunch. Because the thing is, after a year, you kind of know what the winner books are and what the loser books are, and you can kind of sweep the loser books aside and maybe introduce a couple of new winners. It's like, but now you know, there's a couple instances where they do that, but for the most part, it's the same people and it's the same books.
Yeah. So, I mean, really, I think what he's being short-sighted in, like, is, does diversity not sell? No. I don't think that's the case. I think if there is a book that has a minority or a female character and it's really good and they push it properly, people will buy it. But I think if you put a woman or a minority character in a book and expect it to sell based on that fact alone, it is not going to sell because the book isn't good. That's the issue.
The thing is, always got to be, is the book good? Because I think sort of been the exception to this rule, but although I've looked at the February sales, and maybe you can make an argument against that, But Thor was always the exception. Jan Foster as Thor was kind of the exception of the rule. Her book was regularly in the top 10, top 15, top 20. It was always the, sort of the exception of the rule, but even that sort of waned. It's like, I feel like these are like stopgap gimmicks. It's like, okay, we need to do something for a year to pop sales. Let's change the character. Yeah. Let's change the gender. Let's change the ethnicity. And that's sort of a stopgap. And going back to what you were saying earlier with, you can't just have a character as a minority or as a female, and then that's their character. Like, we're gonna keep comparing American Chavez because that's the best example that I can think of. You have to introduce new characters that people are gonna like, that have a personality. Obviously, her sales aren't there, but I'll often quote Kamala Khan. Kamala Khan should be like the blueprint of how to introduce a new character.
I argued with you about that just because I love Kamala Khan. I think she's the best new character to come out in ages, but it's like, where is she a success? None of her books sell. Mm-hmm. Champions is much less popular than Avengers, even though it has the same writer. Like, Squirrel Girl, everybody always talks about Squirrel Girl. Squirrel Girl's book doesn't sell a goddamn thing, and Marvel doesn't come out and say, digital sales. They don't even say that.
I agree with you. I'll be the devil's advocate here. We don't have the digital sales. All we get is the Comic-Con numbers, and that's what we're going based off of.
But the thing with digital sales is, if the numbers were that good, Marvel would give them to us. Mm. And they don't. They don't release them anywhere, so they can't be that good. Unless they're fucking amazing and they don't want to piss retailers off, and that's why they don't do it. But I mean, that's getting into shit that I can't prove either. It's just, from what information we have, these characters are not overly successful. What's successful is the same old shit. And the reason I'm willing to believe that is because it's been a tradition with comic fans. They always like, except for a few exceptions, they like the same shit. They like the same stories. They like the same villains.
I'm going to use that to transition to the real reason. Let's be honest. The real reason why they're doing it, and funny you mentioned the same old stuff, is DC. DC just decided, hey, let's stop with the new 52 stuff. Let's bring all the old stuff back. And let's be honest. That's the real reason why Marvel sales are the way they are, because DC Rebirth came out of nowhere and completely decimated Marvel.
Yeah, and you could make the argument that, well, maybe DC Rebirth brought back old fans. The only problem with that is, if it brought back old fans, then why did Marvel sales dip so heavily? I think we are at a point where there's X amount of comic readers.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them just decided, well, DC's better right now. DC has a more unified focus. We're just going to read DC. I mean, we've done that.
It's not the new shiny, because we're, what, a year into this thing? It's not new shiny anymore.
Yeah,
it's,
DC is still selling more. They've kept it up. And I mean, to be frank, overall, the books are better. Like, they are better than the Marvel books right now.
Yeah, and if David Gabriel wants to be this cool guy who shoots from the hip, obviously we're talking about the story from last week where he's talking about event fatigue. It's like, why not just call it what it is, and it's like, DC's kicking our butt.
Well, but he's trying to come up with the reasons why. Like, why is what we're doing not working, and what they're doing is, well, he's not going to discuss that because they wouldn't do that.
But
they can't admit.
But we've already seen Marvel has something to remedy it. At least that's what they think it's going to be, that Marvel Generations book going forward. I don't know if that's the silver bullet, but we'll have to see. And I think it's late summer, early fall to see if that pans out.
You know what makes me sort of happy about Marvel's slump? For the pro wrestling example, things are bad in WWE and Vince goes back to big juiced up guys. Like, that's his thing. In comics, when things are going bad, they don't do traditional. When things are going bad, comics go experimental. They start doing different stuff. Is, okay, what we're doing isn't working. What can we do different? That's the comic way for years. So hopefully, out of Marvel sort of taking a beating, they'll start thinking outside the box and they'll give us something new, which is what they need. Marvel is incredibly stale right now. Well, the irony of that being, they've got all these new characters.
Well, to be fair, they have remedied a lot of stuff. Like I mentioned earlier, the Marvel Generation things. We've seen how you know, you and I would complain. I'm sure other people would as well. It's like they kept shoving the Inhumans down our throat, and we've seen now that they're sort of backing off on that, and they're reintroducing the X-Men, and it's at least they're doing something. They're not just resting on their laurels, just complaining about how nobody wants to buy these characters. And if anything, we got a bit of an update. We're recording this on Monday, April 3rd, and there was a bit of a retraction from Mr. Gabriel. He said, characters like Squirrel Girl, Ms. Marvel, the Mighty Thor, Spider-Gwen, Miles Morales, and Moon Girl continue to prove our fans and retailers are excited about new characters.
By the way, Spider-Girl sales have fallen off a fucking cliff.
Spider-Gwen.
Or Spider-Gwen, yeah. Her sales have fallen off a goddamn cliff. She was a costume that worked. And since like issue 3, every issue has sold less, and it's continued.
I think she's sort of like Kamala and Squirrel Girl, where they're popular characters, but to sustain a solo title, I don't think the numbers are there, or at least to say they're a smashing success, I don't think the numbers are there.
I think buying into its own hype. Like, if we use a character in a lot of books, then the character is successful. Like, that's what they're saying. Like, you know, Roman Reigns is successful because we push him harder than anyone else.
To be fair, sometimes you do have to push the stuff to get it over. I mean,
I'm saying she's not. She's Spider-Gwen is appearing regularly.
No, I'm saying,
in other books.
Yeah, I agree with you as far as that, but the character I'm thinking of is like Moon Girl. Moon Girl is a character I didn't care about at all, but Marvel kept pushing her and kept pushing her and kept pushing her. And then finally we saw her in Humans vs. X-Men and I was like, hey, this is a pretty good character. I don't know if I'm going to read
her book. As you just pointed out, they're kind of backing off from the Inhumans now, and she looks like she's hanging out with the Inhumans. So how successful is that character if they're putting her with the team that they're trying to bury?
But I'm more so saying that her book may not do wondrous numbers, but as far as a character, I like. And if you put her on a team of other superheroes, I'd be like, okay, that's cool. I like Moon Girl. She's cool.
Yeah, but I mean, a lot of these books that are getting canned, I mean, I like the characters. I like the books, but he's right. They're not selling. That's the core of it. People are not buying these books, period. Mm-hmm. Like, it sucks, but it's, again, comic fans ask for things and they don't follow through.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's not always true, because sometimes... Sometimes if you complain enough and cry enough, Marvel will in fact give you what you want. The example being our next news story, Marvel reinstating digital codes with print releases.
Oh yeah, people complained about that, cause Marvel was doing the thing, and I believe they're still doing it, where instead of getting a digital code for the comic you bought, you got a digital code for another comic that you didn't buy, which I thought was cool, cause like I'm pretty much fully digital now, except for special occasions where I'll go to the comic shop for something in specific. I'm pretty much fully digital. So it didn't affect me much, but I thought, you know, well, yeah, if I buy a fucking book, I don't want another copy of the book digitally, but if I get another comic I don't read free, that's pretty cool. Well, people complain, so now what they're doing is you still get another book free, but you're also going to get a digital for the book you bought.
It really is the best of both worlds, because I thought that approach, the one that Marvel adopted recently, I thought that was the way to go, because I felt like primarily the reason why they did that is because there was a secondary market of people just buying the physical books and then going online and selling it, and Marvel wouldn't get a taste of that. And I thought, okay, I could see why they would do that, and I could see how there's something wrong in that, but I understood why they did it. But what this is really is the best of both worlds. Not only do you get your digital book, but you get a comic book you may have not necessarily wanted. And if you read it and like it, that could parlay to another purchase as well.
Yeah.
So I think this is a really good way to go forward. I'm shocked that DC hasn't picked up on something like this.
DC doesn't have its own digital platform.
Yeah, they really should, though.
Which, they're fucking behind the times on that. I don't understand why they don't. There's probably probably because they think it'll cut into their sales, and they're having good sales right now.
Well, as far as their old stuff, I don't understand why there's no DC Unlimited app where you can go back and read all the old stuff.
Because DC puts out a lot of fucking trades, and they want you to buy the trades.
Well, here's the thing. I'll read a trade, and if I want it enough, like if I read it digitally, I'll go out there and I'll buy the physical thing. Like, I don't think one necessarily negates another.
You're unusual in that respect. Most people won't buy the same thing twice.
That's true. Okay, a new story that I had to go as far as looking up on Twitter to find, because I went to the, you know, my usual places, the Newsaramas, the comic book resources.
Because yeah, I said it to you, and yeah, you were like, you were like, where did you see that? And I go, Tom King's Twitter.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, yeah, that's where I had to find it. I had to put it into Google, and that's where it finally gave it to me. It's like, oh. Yeah, apparently going forward, the next storyline in Batman is going to be the Joker versus Riddler war.
I'm pretty hyped for this because Tom King did really good work with Bane. Mm-hmm. I thought he did something interesting with Hugo Strange. I thought he's done good work with Catwoman, even though she's not a villain. I've always really liked the Riddler. And, you know, Joker's Joker. I want to see how he handles these characters. Because he's put, like, a different slant onto all the villains that works. And I know he didn't want to open up with... He didn't want to open up with Joker. That yeah, was his thing. Because that's... You know, Snyder's entire run pretty much revolved around the Joker or the Court of Owls. And when we weren't doing Court of Owls, we went back to Joker. And then we went back to Joker again and again and again and again. So, I'm pretty hyped about this. I want to see what he does with those characters.
Yeah, and this is obviously after they do all the button stuff with Flash and the Watchmen stuff and Reverse Flash.
Are they gonna deal with the three Jokers?
That's the thing I was wondering. We were introduced to the three Jokers at the end of Rebirth, and up until now they've done nothing with it. And I'm curious because last time we saw the Joker in the New 52 continuity, the one in this current universe, he was cured of his madness as well as being Joker. So that took one Joker off the table. Now we have the
that was pre-Rebirth, though.
Well, that's the thing I'm wondering. Does that reset that Joker? Or because we have two other Jokers to play with, are we going to see one of those two other Jokers be introduced
in Rebirth? In Rebirth, when we saw the three Jokers, mm-hmm, they all had the white face, at least. Mm-hmm. And they all looked like Joker. It looked like New 52 Joker before he turned normal. It looked like... I guess you call him OG Joker. And then the other one, I think it was like the animated Joker.
To me, they look like Golden Age Joker, Silver Age Joker, and Modern Day Joker.
Well, it wasn't so much Silver Age as it was pre-Flashpoint Joker. Mm. Like the Joker that I like.
That's great.
Or fucking, I don't know, Alan Moore killing joke Joker, maybe you could say.
Yeah, there you go. As long as we're talking about characters coming back, this is a story that I found and I talked to you about. And I have relatively no information about it, but maybe you can explain to me, as long as we're talking all things DC. I came upon a news story of a return of Jenny Sparks to Wildstorm in issue 3 of that book.
This is important because they said they're bringing the Authority back. Mm-hmm. Jenny Sparks was a... She's a character who founded the Authority. She was a character in Ellis's Stormwatch. And then when Stormwatch ended, she went out and formed the Authority, a new kind of superhero group. So they're establishing Jenny Sparks in the Wildstorm universe, which is a big deal because everybody reads it and goes, oh, Jenny Sparks, sir, that means Authority's going to come back. Well, unfortunately, they announced the Authority before they announced Jenny Sparks come back. She looks a little different. I don't know if she's English and she still smokes. She looks Asian, which Jenny Sparks was the spirit of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. These were three characters he made who were born at the turn of the century and they would live for 100 years and then they would die. So it kind of makes sense that the spirit of the new century would be Chinese. There's a little bit of political commentary there from Ellis, I think, maybe. But he might go a different way with it. No, but it's a good sign. It's just, from what we've seen in the new Wildstorm, I mean, yeah, we had Engineer. but it feels like it still has superhero stuff, but it feels slightly more grounded than it ever was before. And I'm not sure how you fit the authority into that.
I think what they want to do, as long as he's establishing this continuity, I think he wants to start grounded and then eventually go big over the top. Just to show the dynamic, just to show how this universe is sort of springing into life.
That'd be fine. I'm interested to see where it goes. So,
and since we're talking all things Wildstorm, they also announced at WonderCon this weekend that they're going to release a celebration of 25 years of Wildstorm, a hardcover graphic novel with such creative teams as Jim Lee and Brandon Choi, J. Scott Campbell, for a story with the Authority. The Lee one will be the Wildcat story.
Which is odd. Like, I think, like, okay, they're dealing with Wildstorm and its history. If you're gonna do J. Scott Campbell, he should be drawing Gen 13.
Oh yeah, I got that confused. I'm sorry, I got ahead of myself. Okay. Gen 13 is the J. Scott Campbell story, and the Authority is by Warren Ellis and Brian Hitch.
Right, and that's where he got his start. And, Hitch and Ellis were obviously the original creative team on Authority, and then, did they say Jim Lee's doing Wildcats?
Yes, Jim Lee's doing Wildcats, okay. And Brent Booth is doing Backlash.
Yeah, so they're getting the original artists and, well, at least one of the original writers to work on the characters that, you know, they made famous. So that's kind of neat. Like, that'll pop me, at least. If you have no affection for a while, like, I don't know how much you're going to enjoy reading. it'll have a Ellis and Hitch Authority story, which we have not had for fucking ages since Mark Miller raped the book. Some people liked his run. Like, you know, some people.
Oh, you cut out there for a second, Alex. Are you still there? Hello?
Hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you now. Sorry.
Okay. No, I mean, some people like his Authority in the same way some people like Civil War, because they like stupid comics.
They like punching?
They like punching, and they like characters being really badass.
And extreme!
And extreme. And having identical personalities where they're all dicks.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like Bendis. but some people like that. But either way, Ellis wrote the real versions of those characters where it actually had some thought behind it and some subtlety. So
yeah, I was delicate when I introduced this story to you, because when I first saw the headline that Jim Lee to return to Wildstorm, I was like, oh.
He is the man who hired Warren Ellis.
Uh-huh.
And then let him. Jim Lee was the smartest one at Image, because what he did was he said, okay, I'm not a writer. Like, I draw books. I am not a writer. So I will hire this Warren Ellis guy, and I will hire Alan Moore, and I will have them write the characters I created and do something with them. And it led to some fantastic fucking comics. Which, you know, that's what you want, really good comics. And he was smart enough to say, okay, I'm going to do it. Todd McFarlane did something sort of similar with Spawn.
Mm-hmm.
He hired, like, Neil Gaiman and, oddly, Dave Sim, who wrote the weirdest issue of Spawn ever, featuring a Spawn Cerebrus crossover. He wrote an entire Spawn book that was all about creator rights, which was ironic, because the storyline Neil Gaiman wrote is the one that McFarlane eventually got sued over because he stole his characters and wouldn't pay him for it.
Wow.
Which is very ironic. But, yeah, Dave Sim wrote that story. And, sorry, that whole thing was so funny to me. Yeah, but they're, you know, Jim Lee should be a part of it. Wildstorm was his baby.
Yeah, me not knowing anything, I just thought you would have saw that headline and just started crying, no. Or he would start throwing stuff across the room.
I mean, I don't like him as an artist, but it was his thing.
Mm.
Like, he he eventually sold it to DC, and DC just shit all over it. But yeah.
Well, they seem to be doing pretty good so far, so let's hope.
Well, yeah, they're doing better now than they were years ago.
You know, well, the damage has been done, but yeah, they're attempting to roll some of that back with letting Ellis be at the helm of this new Wildstorm imprint.
Yeah, it's one of the cooler things. Like, Rebirth overall has been good, but the fact that they're like, okay, we're gonna bring back Wildstorm, it's gonna be separate, and Warren Ellis is controlling it. That was pretty fucking cool. And it was really cool that he agreed to it. Because that's kind of a big commitment for him. Like, you're running a superhero line. You can do what you want, go for it. Like, that's pretty cool that they let him do that.
I just hope he doesn't get bored.
I think since he has complete control over multiple things and is probably being paid very handsomely, he'll stick with it.
Ooh, then again, if he gets bored, we'll get Brian Wood.
I don't think they're gonna accept Brian Wood helming their, like, cause Warren Ellis is kind of the focus of this.
Yeah,
I don't think they're gonna be like, yeah, let's just,
hey,
this isn't like Moon Knight.
Hey,
like, this is an entire imprint.
Do you really want, like, if you have the option between Brian Wood and Mark Miller coming back to Wildstorm?
But for sales, DC would want Mark Miller.
I'm sure they would, but it's not gonna happen. Mark Miller's, I'm sure he's busy doing all of his other stuff, so.
Yes. He's busy writing one issue of a comic so he can option it for a movie.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's news. Let's move on to our next segment, this week's books. As longtime listeners to Comic Conversations, you know that I rarely, if ever, listen to Alex. The one time I do, I'm looking for a game to play, because I think I was on a mother streak and I was looking for an RPG to play, and he suggested Phantasy Star 4, and I started to play it and I never looked back. It's so great.
Well, because I kind of got down what Tony likes in RPGs. It's actually very different from what I like.
Uh-huh.
But when I was a kid, I liked what he liked in RPGs. So I thought back to what games did I really like when I was a kid that he hasn't played. And I'm like, Phantasy Star 4.
Because when I first started doing research on the Phantasy Star series, because I think a buddy of mine who had never grown up with a Nintendo system until, like, I think the 64 or I think GameCube, he said that he would just grow up with Sega consoles. And I sort of said, oh, you poor soul, but he shot back really quick. He's like, yeah, Phantasy Star games were really good as far as RPGs are concerned. I was like, okay. And obviously, if you listen to the internet, they're probably going to suggest Phantasy Star 2. And
which
I think Alex
stupid.
Alex was all over that and just said, dude, don't even bother. Play Phantasy Star 4. You'll love it. And to his credit, I liked it. All fair. I mean, we'll talk about games, and that's really my go-to right now. I still haven't beat it yet. But, yeah, I won't shut up about it, so I greatly appreciate that. So that is the battle theme from Phantasy Star 4.
Yay.
All right, let's go into this week's books, which include Inhumans Prime, X-Men Prime, All-New X-Men 19, Avengers 5.1, Mighty Captain Marvel 3, Spider-Woman 17, Thanos 5, Thunderbolts 11, Cinema Purgatorio 9, Lazarus 26, Generation Zero Issue 8, The Clean Room 17, Commodity Challenge 3, Booster Gold / Flintstones 1, Titans Annual, and to open up this week's books, Justice League of America, Issue 3.
Okay. So, they are fighting Lord Havoc. And,
can we just drop the facade and just say the Justice League is fighting Dr. Doom?
No, because it'll get confusing. They're fighting Lord Havoc, who, on this other world, he went to all these separate. Well, it's another version of his world,
mm-hmm.
because this is a outer dimensional threat, and he can all these different countries that they should unite under one country ruled by him. And if they didn't go peacefully, he'd just take the shit over anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the Justice League were able to incapacitate his team. There was one really cool moment with Lobo, which was just an excuse for them to do a full page spread of Lobo and then not have a fight where one of the guys who they kind of built up these villains because they kind of owned the Justice League before. He's like walking into a room and he's like, God, you didn't even do anything to hide yourself. Like I could smell you all over the place. And then we get a full page spread of Lobo fucking lighting a guitar. He's like, yeah, I wasn't trying to hide. And presumably he then beat the ever loving shit out of him because he's fucking Lobo and he's a badass.
I'm so mad because I'm sure DC is gun shy as far as giving us another Lobo series, considering what they tried in New 52 with Lobo, and we obviously read that and panned it, and I think in a recent issue of think Hal Jordan the Green Lantern Corps, they absolutely ripped on the new Lobo.
Yeah, they knew it was bad.
I
don't want Lobo to have a solo book.
I want him to, because he's far and away the star of this book.
Yeah, but he works better in small doses. Like, he's better in this environment than he is by himself. By himself, he gets old kind of quick. But when you only have to deal with him for about 5 pages a month, he's much more enjoyable.
I'm loving what I'm getting, and I'm like, oh god, it's unfortunate because this Justice League of America book is fine. It's not doing wonders for me. But I'm like, God, I love Lobo, so I have to continue reading this book. And if they're gonna fight Marvel facsimiles, I'm like, oh god, this is even better.
Yep. What ended up happening was Havoc got all these countries together. So the country they were working with to turn against him,
mm-hmm.
That country is actually with Lord Havoc now because their leadership sort of bowed down to him. So that puts them in an interesting situation.
Mm-hmm. And then towards the end of this book, we saw that the Justice League of America made quick work of most of Lord Havoc's goons. And basically, he slammed at the end. He's like, I never really needed them from the get-go.
Yeah, it was to give all the characters moments and make them look, you know, good. And then the big badass came in. He's like, oh, they ain't shit. So in the next issue, he'll probably beat shit out of Lobo right away just to show he's threatening.
And then
that would be my guess.
And then Batman, of all people, will single-handedly beat him.
Yeah, Batman will beat him with his super brain. You know what? I remember reading this interview with Grant Morrison, and Grant Morrison invented Bat-God.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the reason he did that was because he didn't like the Frank Miller version of Batman.
Mm-hmm.
I don't either, where he just punched stuff. Like, he said he liked the James Bond super spy version of Batman. And to be that Batman, he has to be much more intelligent than everybody else. In the books, because that's what he has. Like, Batman doesn't have superpowers. He's just a good fighter, but he's also incredibly smart.
Mm-hmm.
So that's his gimmick. A lot of people don't like it.
Batman should not be able to defeat the Flash.
I think Batman's multifaceted enough to where you can have the Frank Miller and the Grant Morrison version of Batman. I don't want to have to choose, so I'm just not going to. I think they're both right. I think Batman's such a multifaceted character that you could have the two interpretations of him.
Let me put over the first Morrison Justice League story. It was where there was a new group of superheroes who were like fixing the whole world, and they seemed really good, but they thought there was something off about them. And then they captured all the Justice League except Batman. And that's when they did the thing of like, oh, he's just a man. What can he do? This is in the first storyline. So Morrison could put over Batman pretty much. And he ends up, he figured out they were white Martians, and Martians are weak to fire. So he ends up beating the shit out of one of them and hanging him in their own base with a note on him that says, "I know your secret." It was fucking awesome. And they were all freaking out because they're like, "He's just a man. How could he do this?" And you finish the first Justice League storyline thinking, Batman is fucking cool.
I don't know if I told the audience, but going forward, I'm starting my video review of like classic comic book graphic novels. And I think eventually I'm going to plan, make my way to that series because that sounds amazing.
It's good. It's like, he did like a issue run.
Okay.
It's so good.
All right. I'll be sure to, when I, start looking up classic comic books to look up, I'm sure that'll be one of the first I look up. Cause I know even DC, when they hand out those pamphlets of like stuff that they recommend that new people pick up, they don't recommend any other, obviously they put over the new 52 stuff cause they technically have to cause it's part of the line going forward. This is actually a couple years ago. But the other thing they put over is Grant Morrison's run on Justice League.
Yep.
So I'm sure it's really good. Yeah. And this week's Justice League was brought to you by Steve Orlando and Ivan Reyes. So Justice League of America, issue 3, great read. All right, let's move on to our final and only other DC mainline book, Titans Annual number 1, writer Dan Abnett, art by Miyuki Jung.
I liked this annual.
I didn't. I didn't because I'm used to a certain thing with the Titans book. Obviously, this is an annual, so it kind of makes sense how you can have this story that's not really on par with the stuff that Abnett's been doing on his title. So I can forgive that.
It did do something with Donna Troy because I pointed out I don't know what version of Donna Troy this is because Donna Troy has the fucking most confusing backstory. Like her backstory has been. And redone so many times, it's frankly a fucking mess. So
really, because I just know the one story.
Well, and this one is different. No, they read it like at one point she was created to be.
She was initially
Wonder
created
Woman's
to be like
friend.
But wasn't she initially created to be a young Wonder Woman? Like stories of her when she was younger.
And then there was that too. That's another one.
People started wondering because she showed up on the Teen Titans. It's like, wait, if these are stories from the past, how is she bebopping around with the current day Teen Titans?
Well, in this one, they sort of explained everything. But the main crux of the story was, and by the way, the villain was from Grant Morrison's Justice League, right? The second trade, the key. Oh. And it also set up a story for the future. So what I'm saying is this was an effective annual. Batman, Nightwing, Flash, Wally West, Flash. What do we call him? Because he's just Flash. Wally.
I don't think we came to a conclusion. Oh.
The other one, the other Wally is Kid Flash.
There's Wally and Young Wally.
Yeah, okay. So Wally, Flash, Donna Troy, Wonder Woman,
cuz we know what you want to call them.
Black Flash.
or African American Kid Flash.
And Tempest and Aquaman.
Mm-hmm.
So they were all in this place and they realized, well, number one, wherever they were, It was trouble because a woman couldn't find them and she clearly would have been looking for them. So it's shielded and they were trying to find a way to break out of this place. And then suddenly Metallo attacks and they're suggesting like, well, would Metallo be behind this? And I think it's Nightwing who points out like, yes, Metallo constructed this elaborate, trap for us and then just came out and tried to. That wasn't really Metallo. And then Parademons attack. Meanwhile, we're cutting to Key, who is talking to someone, and we never found out who this someone is.
No, in fact, they said they're gonna do the reveal later on. It's someone behind a door, and we don't know who it is.
Well, it's someone from another dimension.
Mm.
That's what the key can, he can open doorways to sort of anywhere. And he was trying to free this thing. But he apparently, like, and he was going to use the negative energy created by the Titans fighting the Justice League. That was going to give him enough power to free this, whatever. Well, Donna Troy, discovered, cause Wonder Woman is being kind of a bitch to her. Like everybody else was, you know, like Wally and Barry are super cool to each other. Nightwing and Batman behave like Nightwing and Batman would, but still it's there. And, Aquaman and Tempest get along. But Wonder Woman is being a bitch to Donna Troy. And then she eventually celebrated, cause they had like a test. And they did this little test and they found out someone here isn't human. And they found out it was Donna Troy. And Wonder Woman defends her and she's like, no, the reason she's not human is because she's not human. We told her that she was an orphan who got raised on Themyscira, but that was all bullshit. She was actually created from clay as something to kill me. So it was like, okay, that's a little weird, but okay. Of course, Donna finding out that she is not real.
Oh, she flips out.
Yeah, she completely fucking loses her shit, which is understandable because she was just told she's not a real person and everything she knows about herself is fake.
I can't imagine anyone taking that particularly well. But
yeah, but her extreme negative reaction to this caused her such emotional distress that Omen was able to find them. So at the same time, they bust through the door to find
The Justice League and the Titans find where they're at, but then they also confront Key, and they make quick work of Key. Key runs away, and they show the reveal of Key working for somebody behind a door, and that was pretty much this week's Titans annual. This read like an annual in the sense that it's something that they hadn't been doing in the mainline series, but they still wanted to tell this story.
So yeah, it built for two stories.
Which, I mean, it's fine, but, you know, when I see the name Titans, I'm usually accustomed to a certain thing. And I guess they can kind of get away with it just because, oh, it's an annual, it doesn't have to follow what they're doing in the mainline series, but I thought that was a little disappointing. But the mainline story itself was actually fairly decent, so can't complain too much. Right? So, a book I'm certainly not going to play in any way, shape, or form, and I'm sure if we still did the Book of the Week segment, I'd probably go with it, but Booster Gold, Flintstones, annual number one, writer Mark Russell, art by Rick Leonardi.
Oh. Okay, so what I discovered in this is apparently the new Fred Flintstone is nothing like the old Fred Flintstone.
Mm-hmm.
He lives in Bedrock in the past, but he is a completely generic character. Who does things. I found him very boring. But Booster Gold,
I found
very boring.
The art design I found very boring, but I've seen panels here and there of the title, and I know the writing's really good on this series.
I'm sure the writing is good, but it doesn't need to be flipped. People for generations grew up with the Flintstones. You expect something in particular. You don't need like a serious adult version.
Yeah, the sort of realistic Flintstones, and I know that's what they've done with all the other Hanna-Barbera properties that they've had, and they've made comic books on, and it's primarily part of the reason why I'm not doing a solo review of Banana Split's Suicide Squad, because they changed them as well. I'm just like, why do you feel the need to make them all grounded and realistic? Like, some of these characters, especially the Flintstones, it's like, supposed to be over-the-top and bombastic. He's a cartoon character from Hanna-Barbera. Why do you feel the need to make him like a grounded, realistic version?
Well, maybe because Booster Gold is so goofy they wanted the mix. So, but this was Booster Gold from the future.
Mm-hmm.
I guess before he came back to the past. And he was trying to impress a girl he was going on a date with. So these aliens come in and attack, and Booster goes out to fight them. And then he travels back in time to try to stop their original invasion. But what actually happens is when he travels back in time, his like time platform crashes into an alien of the same race who is like preaching peace, and he cuts him in half and kills him, which we later find out is what caused the war in the first place. Like it's why they came here. Which I actually thought that was really funny.
But he didn't really die because he was just going to a Who concert, right?
No, that was a different alien. That was Krabulon.
Because my favorite is he finally shows up and he's like, "Well, what are you guys doing?" He's like, "Well, we're avenging you." He's like, "I had a message of peace." He's like, "Yeah, we're avenging your message of peace."
Yeah, which is pretty funny. And then he called them all stupid and told them they had to leave. That's how it got resolved. Although it did have a great moment before he came back, because like, he was trying to fix his time platform, and the men could not do it. They could not produce enough electricity via eels.
Oh, my favorite, when he was like, "I need X amount of electricity." I forgot what the unit he used.
And he goes, how many eels is that?
He's like, "What is that?
Or what is that in eels?" They didn't have electricity in 2 million BC or whatever the fuck.
Oh, and during his journeys when he was on the Titan platform, I think he made his way to the 60s. He's talking to a young Alfred. He's like, "Oh, Alfred, what's up? Can you leave can you loan me like 10 bucks and like put it in a bank account?"
He's like, "Yeah, I think we can handle that." And he's like, "Okay." That played out in the end when he goes to the bank. And he has like $3.5 million in it because of the interest on the $10 he got in the '60s, going to, 2,456, I believe is when he lives. That was cute. Yeah. So the only other joke in the, cause this was just a comedy book. The only other joke in this I really liked was, when Booster's appearing to the aliens and he has the dead body of their prophet and he's got his hand in it and he's like controlling him like a puppet, but then it falls out and they noticed it and they're, "Oh, kill him." But that's when the other time traveler showed up to save him. And
or another joke, and I realize what we're doing here is just we're saying all the jokes, but
yeah, one of them is there wasn't a lot to this.
When the alien shows up in the past and he promises them that they'll live forever in peace and your erections will last 4 hours.
Oh yeah, and then after Booster killed him, one of the guys walking away and he's like, "Thanks, he stole 4 hour painless erections from me."
Yeah, I didn't know what to make of this. Obviously, I knew it was going to be a little goofy, and I've heard really good things of the Flintstone title. I still don't like the art creative decision that they've gone with the Flintstones, and maybe I'll give an issue.
If Fred Flintstone's going to be, like, generic, then why not draw him more generic?
I hope the writer that wrote this is the guy who's regularly writing the Flintstones title. Cause
I imagine he would be, cause Booster Gold doesn't have a title.
Yeah, and I'm hoping it's that guy, cause I think Mark Russell, isn't that the guy who did, Prez that we were so fond of?
I don't know. I didn't do research on this, I just read it.
Oh, I thought you were so, I remember when we started reading Prez, you thought so highly of it. And yeah, now that I'm looking it up, it is in fact the same writer. So when we lamented that they were going to cancel Prez, I was happy to see that Mark Russell was going to land on his feet and do this Flintstones title. And from what I hear, it's got a big buzz around it, so maybe this will inspire me to read the next issue and do, maybe not a solo review, but in my own private time, I'll read the Flintstones trade. All right, let's move on to our next DC book with Commandi Challenge, issue 3, writer Jimmy Paola, let's see if I can remember.
Palmiotti.
Palmiotti, thank you. And Amanda Connor on art.
Who I believe is his wife. I think they are married.
Even though she still goes by her maiden name?
Yes, well, she's a comic artist.
Okay.
So, she draws Harley Quinn.
Ah, okay, there you go.
So, yeah, but I actually really like this. Like, as far as the Commandy things went, I thought this one was weird.
It's getting that thing that I was sort of afraid of, where every artist kind of, I mean, every writer kind of no-sells everything that happened up to this point.
Well, they're not going to be able to in the next one. Because the way they set this up, like, it's going to have to be followed up on. No question.
Yeah, because up until now, it's been like, oh, Commandy wakes up and he's in this new part of the world that's really all screwed up and wacky. And it's like, okay, it's the third issue now, and they've kept doing that. And every single time we get another writer on this, it's something new.
Well, yeah, but it is. I mean, this was connected to the last one. It's just, what are they going to do? You have to make them stories that are easy to follow up on.
But I'm saying this, the whole point of this challenge was it was supposed to be a continuing story, and I feel like
And it is.
Yeah, a little bit.
Well, it is. They always pick up on the plot elements from the last one. But, so in this one, Commandy is captured by, some people, and they think he is a messenger from the gods because a picture of him as a kid fell onto the island, apparently when he crashed down, I guess. So a picture of him appeared to them, and they thought he was a messenger from the gods. As soon as he wakes up, there's this green woman there. And he's like, who are you? And she's like, oh, my name is this, and I'm yours.
Created specifically just to serve you in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and you're thinking like, oh, it's like a sex thing. He doesn't like that. He's like, no, you can be your own person. You don't have to be mine. And she's like, no, you understand. Like, I'm yours. We later come to find out, as he's having dinner with them, and they all have these green people, and just fucking start eating them.
And my favorite thing is they lament, because they're like, yes, it is in fact very painful, but the good thing is our limbs and our heads do in fact grow back.
Yeah, like they're eating them, and as they bite like their arms and stuff off, they look like they're in incredible pain. But, you know, she explains, like, he won't eat her, but she explains to him, like, yeah, this is what we're for, this is all we know. And apparently these guys are just terrible people, like they're capturing the bat people and using them as like cannon fodder in their war. And then the bat people won't take their own bat people back after they're captured because they're tainted. Everyone in this world is a dick.
Yeah, for the most part. And they're all, with a couple exceptions, they're all animals.
Yeah, well, that could be why. Well, anyway, him and, plant-based food girl, I'm not sure what she is, and a couple of the bat people get captured again. The bat people get killed, and then we find out that Commandy and Plant Girl are going to be dinner for a giant, was it like a giant tiger?
Yes, they were captured by a race of tigers, and they were tied up to be fed like you would see in the old King Kong, to a giant tiger.
Who can talk.
And
because he was like, ooh, dinner. And then it ended. Because that's your...
And is the tiger also eating a cheeseburger?
He was not eating a cheeseburger.
I missed that book. I mean, I know why we dropped it. We're talking about the God Hates Astronauts. The problem with that book, it was just joke after joke after joke. And it's like very little story-wise.
We couldn't talk about it. Okay. You remember that time when they told the joke about King Tiger eating cheeseburger? That was awesome.
And that's fun. That's fine to do, you know, when we're doing the Booster Gold Flintstones crossover, you know, one-off. But when we're talking five issues in, we're still reciting all the jokes that happen in the book. It's time to move on.
That's why I don't cover Squirrel Girl on this show. It's like,
there's multiple reasons why I don't cover Squirrel Girl.
Squirrel Girl has been good.
It's too peppy for its own good.
Yeah, well, I like it.
All right, in our final DC book, Clean Room, Issue 17, writer Gail Simone, art by Walter Giovanni.
Well, okay, so what this one did was, they had to get the villains theirs back, but they also had to put Astra over.
They managed to do both in this issue.
Yeah, they did both. The friendly hillbilly boys were feeding the shit out of that. I don't know. I suppose he's a somewhat high ranking demon fellow.
And Gail Simone did address something we were complaining about. We said that, you know, how were they able to kill this thing with bats if supposedly, you know, they had so much problem in the past killing these things before? Yeah, and we saw
they didn't kill it.
They didn't kill it. And in fact, I think Gail Simone contacted us on Twitter because I obviously promote the show and I you know, on twitter.com, a comic podcast, I often, you know, promote the show and I do funny stuff with panels. And Gail Simone did, in fact, tell us there isn't a hierarchy when it comes to these aliens.
Oh, so maybe they did kill some of the lower-ranking ones?
Exactly.
Okay,
she listened to our review, and she did point out, it's like, yeah, there is, in fact, a hierarchy.
Okay, well, the bigger one, he was not, in fact, dead, but he was massively fucked up. Like, they beat the shit out of this guy with bats. He's got, like, his ribs sticking out, his head's all busted.
Well, the body he was possessed was all messed up, but he seemed he didn't seem phased at all, because he was still laughing in their faces.
Well, yeah, but he, you know, the dialogue showed that he was a bit hurt, and they did scare him because they're all fucking terrified of Astrid's perfume. And the guy at one point, he's like, yeah, so I just couldn't help it. I had to pick up a bottle of this, and I'm thinking about pouring it into your open eye socket there. And then he's like, or you can tell us how to stop this. Stop what, you ask? Well, the demons, or monsters, or aliens, we still don't know what they are.
I prefer to call them alien demons, because that's basically
They who have infiltrated society have now, they are all starting shit simultaneously to make everyone in the world turn on each other and go nuts and kill each other.
Well, as we saw, their plan originally was they were gonna shut down everything electronically, and we saw that they lived up to their word and they started doing that, and then people went out of their houses and started talking to each other, and it's then that we saw a couple of them influence people, getting them to turn on each other.
Yeah, and, but, you know, they're working on how to stop it. Now, the other thing is the kid, Astrid's nephew, who is apparently possessed by some sort of evil queen of these people. She got a guy to come and pick, she's a baby. Like, she's a young child, but she got a guy to come pick her up because she wants to go get involved with this shit and kill Astrid. At the same time, Astrid and Chloe and what's the other one's name? Killian?
I believe so, yes.
The heavy. They were captured by a guy, the crazy hillbilly serial rapist murderer, who was obsessed with Astrid, and he could control the clean room like Astrid did. So he trapped Chloe and Killian in one of his memories, a bad memory from his past, where one of the women he captured escaped and stabbed him in the back with an axe and actually killed him, but he lived somehow. She technically killed him, but they were able to save his life and brought him back to life, and after that point he could see the aliens. So, but he was also balls crazy. So he's all, you know, Astrid's very confident, and she's all talking shit to him. And then finally, like, he's like, oh, what are you gonna do, critter? And then she reveals that the fucking clean room is mine. I control this shit. And then she found Chloe and Killian, saved them, and then she locked him in a memory with a monster so that he would live forever, but he would be experiencing incredible pain forever.
My favorite is lamenting. He's like, oh, you're not going to kill me, are you? And he's like, no, in fact, I'm going to make sure you live forever.
Yeah, so she went kind of hard at him, but he was a terrible person. So
yeah, like, by all means. I mean, he wasn't nearly as bad as the aliens, but you know,
he was pretty fucking bad.
He's pretty crazy. He's a pretty bad dude. You could tell if he had his way, you know, things would have gone real bad real quick.
Well, he did threaten to murder Chloe and then rape her dead body. So,
last time I checked, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, that's pretty terrible. So they have one of these things that is fairly high ranking and are torturing it to find out how to stop what's going on. And Chloe, is going to make the guy because he claimed he knows how to kill them. She's using this incredible torment to get him to tell her how to kill them.
Yes.
So they're, you know, bad shit's going down, but they're hopefully in a good spot to fight back.
Yeah, which, that's the one thing I kept noticing, because I read this book, and obviously I read lots of stuff. Like, obviously I've read Miracle Man 15. I've compared that to this book before. I've read we're still reading Uber Invasion. And it's like, that stuff is like, there's lots of gore and it's mean-spirited, but this is the book, I don't know why this one specifically, this is the one that phases me, and it's like, oh god, there's times where I'm thinking about just pulling back and stop reading this book, but I realize it's still a comic book, it's still gonna follow the structure where, yeah, sure, the bad guys are gonna get, they're gonna get their victories here and there, but ultimately they're gonna get their comeuppance, so.
Yeah, I like this book. I find it to be enjoyable. And the incredible violence I actually enjoy. I think it fits the tone of the book.
I don't know if it's just the violence, because obviously I've read tons of books that are violent. It's just the demons and their mean-spirited nature. It's a little much for me.
Well, yeah, but they're so easy to hate. Like that. I mean, these are real fucking heels. Like, they have no redeeming qualities whatsoever. Like, none at all. And when, like, they're begging for, like, when a bad guy in this book begs for mercy.
Yeah, you have like, no, you have no sympathy.
Yeah, you have no sympathy at all. You're like, oh no, don't give me fuck you have, up this
you
job.
You have no sympathy for him?
I have absolutely no sympathy for any of the bad guys in this movie. I do have some sympathy for Astrid.
Well, yeah, I mean, she's obviously
She's a huge, like, somewhat sociopathic bitch, but look what she went through.
And
like,
and let's be realistic here. Like, look who she's having to deal with. It's like, when you can't deal with that and not have it affect you in any way, shape, or form. And in fact, there was the one scene with the dad where it was just absolutely creepy, where she's obviously a little girl and the alien's pretending to be her dad, but she can see right through it. And the alien just tells her, it's like, well, no one's going to believe you. Everyone's going to think you're crazy. Just come over here and give me a kiss. And it's like, oh, stop it, please.
Yeah, that was, yeah. But, you know, it all worked out, I suppose.
Yes, very much so. All right, let's move on to the Marvel portion of the show with Inhumans Prime number one.
Okay, so we had to follow up on, what's his name?
And if you're wondering why I'm listening to No Creative, I'm going to Comic List right now and I can't find anything.
Okay. Well, we had to, I guess, move forward with what are we doing with the Inhumans now that there's no Terrigen? So, of course, we pick up with Maximus, who is wandering around the desert with Legion and the Unspoken and just kind of being a dick to them.
If we got like a mini series with them, I'd be cool with it.
It they have been very entertaining, but I mean it's done with now, so unfortunately we're not gonna get a whole lot more of it. Yeah, so they're wandering around the desert, you know, bopping around doing whatever, and Karnak shows up. Triton wants to. He's done with Maximus, like he ain't having this shit anymore. But Karnak shows up, so of course, Maximus does his mind control gimmick on Triton and has him fight, Karnak. As, you know, as he would.
And that works for a while, but then Karnak very quickly brings up the point of, I know what your weakness is, you're looking at me when really, what you should be worrying about is behind you. And then it's, we see the entire Inhumans race, included there are the royal family as well as all the new Inhumans.
Yep. They're all there.
And Maximus very quickly thinks real fast and decides, hey, the royal family is used to me, but all these new Inhumans, they don't know my shtick yet.
So, yeah. Which is funny that he fell it out like that. But, they end up, capturing Maximus and Triton and everyone else. We don't know if they, I don't think they actually jailed Triton. But, they end up imprisoning Maximus again. But he tells Black Bolt something that we didn't get to see what it was.
He was like, oh, you can keep me here all you want, but the fact of the matter is I still know our secret.
Yeah, and like, we don't know what that secret is, but it pissed Black Bolt off, whatever he said. And by the way, when did Medusa and Black Bolt get back together?
At the end of the Inhumans vs. X-Men book.
Okay, I've completely forgotten, because like, she's like, husband, what's going on? The other thing that happened was the Inhumans are no longer a monarchy. Apparently Marvel is doing this thing where there are no monarchies in Marvel.
Well, it's like, if they're supposed to be, you know, heroes, it doesn't make sense that they have a monarchy.
Well, they weren't bad. Like, they weren't a bad king and queen. But either way, Medusa put ISO in charge temporarily while they work on, I don't know, elections, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so she put ISO in charge just to handle the passover of power. ISO will probably end up getting voted in as a leader, and she won't be over. But it doesn't matter, because we know the Inhumans are going to go to outer space, and they'll probably just leave ISO behind. I hope when they go to outer space, they take, like, the Inhumans everyone cares about and, like, Reader.
Like, Reader, obviously Kamala's got to stay on
no,
Earth.
No, but it's just Medusa, Black Bolt, Karnak, Triton, Gorgon, maybe Crystal, and Maximus for some reason they bring, and then
well, the book
Reader.
The book I know with the Inhumans is supposed to be called Royals. Yeah, so I presume it's going to focus on primarily the royal family, which has always been the core Inhumans characters. Which has always been my problem with the Inhumans book. I mean, obviously you want to try to get new characters over, but they tried for like 2 years and Reader got over and a couple others got over, but really most of them didn't get over.
I don't even think Reader got over. Reader just got over with us. Cause he's got a cool gimmick and he looks kind of cool. So we like him, but I don't really think he's over.
No. And the characters that are over, like Kamala and Moon Girl, it's like they can't go. They happen to be Inhuman, but they're not necessarily over because they're Inhumans.
Exactly.
It's a friendly coincidence they happen to be Inhumans. And when the Inhumans are doing something, you know, big league, and they need their entire ranks, it's like yeah, they'll call them up. But other than that,
they always trot Kamala out for that. She'll appear and not really say much.
Yeah, she's
they like, did say her inhuman power was to embiggen. Which can also shrink, so that's not really fair. She doesn't do it a lot.
She's size manipulation, so.
Yeah, but just said embiggen her. They made it a verb.
You're arguing semantics here.
No, I'm just stating what the comic book, like that's how. Because it listed who they were and then what their inhuman power was, but with a lot of them it was incorrect. Like with her, it said embiggener, and it's like no, she does other stuff.
Yeah,
and then with Frank the detective, it just said he has guns that attach to his eyes and he shoots fucking lasers out of them. Like that's more than just a detective. He is a detective. I don't know. I thought that was kind of weird.
Story-wise, that's how he's useful, though.
Yes, he does detective work because, you know, Karnak's a fucking idiot, I guess. And he can't figure stuff out.
He can find the weaknesses of them, but he can't necessarily solve a mystery. Yeah,
but he can't solve a mystery.
I found this book to be a lot more effective than our next title, X-Men Prime number one. I found this book to be a lot better as far as it's told a story, but at the same time, it lets you know where they plan on going with the Inhumans going forward.
This didn't really mention space, did it?
No, but you got the impression, like, these are the players that we're going to be using going forward, and Maximus is going to be captured, and ultimately we're pulling ranks, and we're going back to the core Inhumans team that people like. And
yes.
And my real criticism, and obviously this is going to transition to our next book, I found the X-Men Prime book, it did show us all the various teams, and it did show the directions of this, but with that said, I got no real story out of it.
What, the X-Men Prime?
Yeah, it's like...
I got it. What they were doing was they were trying to reestablish the status quo. Like, this is what the Inhumans are going to be now. This is what they're going to do. The X-Men are going to be like a big, happy team again. Mm-hmm. We're all gonna get together. I do question they had to get out of, I'm skipping ahead because this is just the one thing I noticed, that they had to get out of limbo. Mm-hmm. So instead of putting the school back where it was, you know, on the land they owned, they put it in the middle of Central Park.
I think that was more of a symbolic thing as opposed to, you know, we're mad at Fox and what they're doing with the movie stuff. So we're kind of going to put the X-Men in limbo because they're basically the redheaded stepchild. And that's the way we're going to treat them.
It made sense story-wise why they would be in limbo.
But I think symbolically they put them in Central Park as their way of saying the X-Men are back in a big way. And
well, because their new stated purpose is they're going to be heroes. It's the exact storyline Joss Whedon did after Morrison. Mm. Like, we're going to show people that we're heroes. We're still going to take care of the mutants, but we're going to be superheroes, which would be why they're in New York, because New York, as you know, in Marvel, is the center of the universe. Everything happens in and around New York or Wakanda. So that's why they did it, but it's just like, you don't own Central Park, so really you shouldn't be able to put your base there, although it is a very visible place, so I guess that's okay.
And I'm sure they're probably going to address that going forward, but to me it's more a symbolic thing that the X-Men are back, and they're front and center in the Marvel Universe, as opposed to they're in limbo, and that's sort of symbolic of what Marvel thinks of them.
Yeah, that's fine, and they're... The other thing was Kitty Pryde is their leader again. Storm did not want to be leader anymore. Storm actually wanted to leave. Like, she blamed herself for what happened. And
her first order of leader of X-Men, she's like, I'll force you to stay.
You can't leave. Like, you've been here longer than almost anyone, and you've been a leader for a lot of, like, everything Kitty said made sense. Kitty was a bit bothered by, like, the young X-Men because I'm older than Scott and Jean. This is weird. And this actually took place after All New X-Men because they referenced something that happened in that book. But, yeah, so the new X-Men team is everything on Earth. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, like, all the mutants, pretty much. And by the way, Quentin Quire just chilling at the X school.
Yeah.
So apparently the entire storyline has been abandoned. He didn't speak, but he was seen twice.
Good.
And he's just a guy going to school, even though he graduated.
Because they forgot. Because Secret Wars.
Yeah, Secret Wars. Secret Wars did it. Reed Richards decided to go around and fuck around with Quentin Quire's continuity.
But not fix his best friend.
Well,
I'm never gonna let that go. But yeah, this basically it set the table for all the X-Men titles. You know, the Gold title, the Blue title, X-Force, Generation X, Am I forgetting any other title? I know.
Yeah, and they're gonna need those other titles because they have way too many characters again.
Oh, that was funny because who was it that was lamenting? I think it was Angel. He said, or I think it was Kitty said, yeah. And Angel used to complain that 13 X-Men was too many.
Yeah, because they cut to the shot and it's just every X-Men. The thing with this was like they didn't set up a villain in particular. I mean, I suppose they set up a new status quo, at least new from what it's been for, like, the last 8 years. Like, they're going to be a superhero team.
My criticism of this book is, obviously, it wants to be like...
Kitty didn't mention she was a Jew once.
Well, that wasn't my real criticism. It's basically, the Inhumans book found a way to say, okay, this is the characters we're going to focus on, this is where we're going forward. But they had a story, whereas this is just... These are the X-Men teams. This is what they're going to do. And
Because the X-Men being in New York and being a big deal again, they think that is the selling point. Like, they don't need anything else. They got that.
Be nice if I got a story with my... This felt like a paid advertisement. It's like...
Well, it did get the school out of limbo and it set up Kitty as the leader. So it did something. It didn't do something amazingly exciting, but it did something.
I just want a story with my comic book. Am I asking for too much here?
There was a story. She talked to Storm. And she somewhat interacted with the kids.
A little bit.
Yeah.
All right, since we're talking all things X-Men, let's talk all new X-Men issue 19, writer Dennis Hopeless, art by Mark Bagley.
See, I like this more.
Oh, yeah, definitely me. This, I thought that was way better because this was an actual story.
So a couple different things happened in this. One of them was, Cyclops is super pissed that Emma got away because Emma is the one who ruined his name and nobody really knows it. Like,
he's all the X-Men will know it, but you know, John Q. Public walking down the street still going to blame Cyclops.
All the people, me don't know it, which fair enough. I'd be pissed about that. I guess. Yeah, in fact, I would. I would definitely be pissed about that.
But they were quick to point out, it's like, well, that's the X-Men shtick. It's like, you're not supposed to care what society thinks of you, because more often than not, society tends to not be so cool with X-Men. So.
And like, Jean kept talking to him, and there's this funny moment where he, like, goes to kiss Jean. And then she's like, he's like, oh, God, I'm sorry, I just made this really awkward. She's like... Yeah, so we don't want to go back to the past. We want to, you know, have our own future, and we kind of know where us being together leads. So we should probably not do that. And he's like, "Yeah, you're right."
Why didn't you say, "Oh, I don't feel that way about you," as opposed to, "Oh, I don't want to be with you because I've seen where it goes." Well, it's like we've seen so far that established that they're clearly different people. So conceivably, something different could happen, but.
Well, yeah, but I mean, they're not that different. Like, they're just younger versions.
Was she just trying to gently...
Well, she wants to not even have to deal with it, yeah, I think.
She's like, I would totally be with you, but, you know, we've seen where that goes.
Yeah, that's bad news, brother.
But what we also had was, Beast had been trying to figure out something magical so they can go back to their timeline. And in this issue, he figures that out and he's able to do it. But he specifically wants to show all the X-Men because it's pretty important going forward. So he manages to activate the magic. They go back to the past and it's then that they're, who do they fight here? They fight one of the old X-Men villains and Cyclops is like, oh, okay. I remember how I screwed up and I know I'll learn from my mistakes. And then Beast is like, whoa, slow down. Watch this. And then sure enough, the original X-Men show up. And Beast is able to figure out. He's like, there's a reason why we haven't been able to go back is because...
It's not there anymore. The universe corrects itself. Mm-hmm. We're back to that form of time travel in Marvel. The X-Men never disappeared. Sort of.
I like that explanation better in the sense that the universe corrected itself because I always hated the gimmick of you know, what happens? I mean, eventually they have to go back. That was always my shtick. I was like, well, they can't stay
there
forever.
They're not going back.
But now with this explanation, it sort of explains it away saying, well, the universe corrected itself. There are original X-Men back in the past so they can stay in present day. And now that lingering thing of, well, they have to return one day, don't they? Or if the young Beast dies in the present Marvel 616, is that going to mean present day Beast is going to disappear?
No, he wouldn't.
Yeah. I actually thought that was pretty creative. Cause I that lingering thing always happened in the back of my head, and I thought it was kind of annoying. So I'm glad they did explain that away. And then at the end of this book, the X-Men decided to dance. Cause that's how Dennis Hopeless ends probably all of his books.
Yeah, they were going to, what were they? They were going to do something else, but then they decided to have a dance. Oh. Yeah, they decided to have a dance party.
I hope if the X-Men title ever ends, that's how it ends. It's just a dance party.
Like the Shield all dance?
Mm-hmm. As Vincent Verhey of WrestlingObserver.com fame, there is, in fact, sometimes nothing funnier than pro wrestlers dancing.
I wouldn't know. I think there are definitely things funnier than that.
That's debatable. Alright, since we're turning back to Annals of Time, let's go with Avengers 5.1.
Okay, so this was the last issue of this in the past story that explained how Avenger X is going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, because this, okay, so in the last issue, Avenger X turned heel. Did not give an origin, but turned heel. And the Avengers were able to defeat her because, okay, she had sucked their life force out.
Mm-hmm.
So they were pretty much dead. But what happened was, the OG Avengers, they saw this on the news, which is kind of funny. So they came to save them. And like, Hank Pym was able to find a way to reconstitute them from their last spark of life. And then made them immune to her powers. So her powers could no longer affect them. So they're,
I love that, cause this is supposed to be a book and theme of the Silver Age of comic books, and for them to just very, very quickly explain away, it's like, oh.
Like, oh, Hank Pym fixed it.
Hank Pym fixed them with magic. I mean, with comic book science.
So they're fighting her, and they, like, she tries to fly away or something. Or they hit her? I can't actually remember. Something happened and she like flew away and they were going to find her, but the Frightful Four found her first and they were mad that she put a beating on them.
Well, she helped put a beating on them because
helped put a beating on them. So they beat the shit out of her and buried her alive. And, but the thing is, it's like, she's not dead. And that's why when we saw the picture in that first issue of Avengers with the Avenger X grave, that's cause they put, like Wizard put a, Here Lies Avenger X thing on a rock or something.
Mm-hmm.
And under it, but she wasn't dead. Now, this would have taken place like years ago. I refuse to believe that she just stayed underground for years and she's only now going to come out because...
Well, maybe she is in fact dead and because, you know, this is obviously going to play into the modern day Avengers title with Kang. So with that, you can always do time travel.
And I don't think there's going to be any time travel whatsoever in this story.
And as we saw, like we knew sort of from day one when this book was announced, that it's gonna play into the modern day Avengers title. And the solicitation we saw at the end of the first issue of the regular Avengers series where they had Here Lies Avengers X.
Like, yeah.
That's gonna play into the modern day, story.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. I like this mini. I thought it was a good one.
Yeah, I didn't know this was going to be a mini, but this did in fact read like a conclusion to this book, this series.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like it's just like, this is what we're going to do to get to this storyline. It didn't seem like a huge deal, but it was a nice way to set up a storyline that's better than doing, you know, five issues of the main book that are all past-like and stuff.
But... My only complaint is I wish this was a continuing series. Cause it is fun. Especially all the stuff they do at the beginning of the book. And then you go to the letter section and they have all, they advertised the comics like they used to back in the day. I thought that was really cute. But maybe after a while it wore its welcome out.
Yeah, I don't need it to stick around. I liked it for what it was, but
how long? I know this is obviously Wade writing it. How long did that series go where Wade wrote all the old DC
stories? Year one.
Yeah, how long did that last?
It was 12 issues.
Can get 12 issues of this?
That he didn't write that for no, because he told the story he had to tell. He didn't write that specifically for a Justice League storyline he was doing. Like it was involved in a Justice League storyline he was doing, but he could have written that story without doing year one. Like year one was just he wanted to write a storyline with the classic Justice League.
Yeah, you know what's probably going to happen. It's going to sell probably decently enough to where they'll make it a continuing series, but they'll put somebody else on it, and it won't be nearly as good.
Nah, it's not going to be a continuing series. He's done this before. He's done these.
No, but did you hear what I said? They're probably going to put somebody else on it, and it won't be nearly as good.
No, I don't think they're going to do it. I don't think this would have sold well enough to justify it.
Okay. Maddie Captain Marvel issue 3.
Maddie Captain Marvel?
Sorry, Mighty. Sorry, I was lamenting because I'm like, there's a lot of these books don't have creative on comic lists, and it's throwing me for a loop.
Okay. Captain Marvel, her powers are getting fucked up by the little Kree girl.
Mm-hmm.
And they couldn't really explain why, they are.
Which I guess it's something, because, you know, the problem always been with Captain Marvel, it's like, yeah, 3 issues in, we've tapped out, but at least they have an interesting premise going forward.
Yeah, and she, you know, since Captain Marvel is supremely powerful or whatever, they had to kind of, they really power her down, but they had to make her vulnerable. Some way, I guess, was that what they were trying to do in this issue?
Yeah, but then they were also trying to, it was also hearkening back to how she got her powers. I guess it's sort of an explanation for the character as well. It's, you know, obviously she's trying to figure out what's wrong with her, so she goes to an old facility at the Antarctic. That was
that Tony Stark had built a AI of himself on, but funnily enough, Tony Stark had removed her her access.
Mm-hmm.
Like she was classified as like an enemy. So a giant ice monster ended up attacking her.
But like the AI couldn't figure out why. He's like, I know who you are, and I'm cool with you, but your name's not on the list, and. Yes, this thing is gonna happen now. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that whole thing was actually really funny how that worked out. And, you know, she didn't want to tell him, although she did hug him and she apologized to him. And he's like, I don't know what this is all about. And she's like, just let me do this.
I need this.
which is pretty funny. She is an enjoyable character in her book.
Which is more we can say for Civil War 2.
Yes, in Civil War 2, she had Mark Miller syndrome. So, where she became fucking fascist.
Yeah, terrible. Insufferable.
Although everyone seems to have forgiven her.
For the most part.
Yeah, well, everybody at the party and Spider-Woman forgive her.
Yeah, but basically the rest of this book was she's trying to figure out what's wrong with her powers, and the only way she could do that is if she finds a sample of her DNA before she got her powers so they can figure out what's wrong with her, and they can compare the two DNA samples. And, and I feel like that was the crux of this book.
Yeah, that was the important bit that's going to lead to something else. So,
an interesting direction. It seems like at least long-term they have something planned, and I think this is probably the longest longest tenure we've had on a Captain Marvel run?
Yes, we've stuck with it for 3 issues, and I still like it. I mean, it's gonna get canceled, but
I don't know if it's gonna get canceled. It's still Captain Marvel, and they're still pushing her pretty hard.
I don't think it matters.
Well,
they'll relaunch her when the movie.
Yeah, and then it'll do poorly, and then they can lament and cry how Captain
Marvel's
Marvel.
Maybe that time I'll say, yeah, if it gets canceled this time, they're like, fuck, the book is actually, and what the hell?
They'll just do what they do with everything. Eventually, they'll give up and be like, okay, let's just put Bendis on the book, because at least he'll
Well, yeah, but Jessica Jones ain't selling, and Bendis is on that book.
But he's on the Iron Man title, and I think that's actually doing pretty decent.
It's not. It's in, like, the low 30s.
Oh, well.
Yeah, like, Bendis apparently not the name he used to be. His X-Men run hurt him, I bet.
Probably a lot.
Because it was shit.
For the most part. It started off really strong, and then it just...
Jessica Jones has been good, I thought.
Yeah. But, you know, that's always going to be a struggling title.
Yeah, maybe. Because comic creators hate diversity.
With that said, Spider-Woman issue 17, writer Dennis Hopeless, art by Veronica Fish.
Last issue. This is an incredible last issue. So, she wants to announce to all of her superhero friends that she is now dating Porcupine. And, baby's asleep downstairs and they're on the roof because they have the coolest apartment ever. And they always have parties on the roof. So, Porcupine's there with her and they're kind of kissing before everyone shows up and all the superheroes show up and it's kind of awkward because, like, you know, Porcupine's like as Black Widow said, a D-list villain. And, she has to deal with that because she's standing there and she's drinking because she made sure to have lots of wine ready. She's standing there and she's drinking, but she's looking around like everyone's whispering about her and Porcupine. And she's really uncomfortable with it. But the worst one is Black Widow, because she said she doesn't like whisper about things. Like, she says them out loud.
Yeah, she doesn't.
And she's basically like, why is she here with this fucking D-lister? She's not offended that he used to be a villain, because she used to be a villain. She's offended that she is with a guy who is so
dumpy.
He's a jobber.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she's with a jobber in her opinion. And that's not good for her. So that's why she's upset. But they get in a fight about it. And while they're fighting, Porcupine went downstairs to feed the baby or to see what was going on with the baby, because he yelled on the baby monitor. Mm-hmm. And when he walks in, fucking baby is on the ceiling. So, what does that mean? That means he has powers. He has all of her spider powers, because when he tries to grab him, he shoots him with the energy blasts. And the kid's just cracking up. Like, he thinks this is great.
It's just fun, because the thing is, Porcupine's freaking out, and Porcupine knows the kid enough that if he reacts big, the kid will just think it's part of the game, and, you know, he'll just escalate what's going on.
Yeah, so they're all talking about it and everything, and then suddenly the baby is crawling up onto the roof, and Porcupine is crawling after him, which is just, it was a great image, and baby falls and ends up in a bowl of chips, but then he's gonna fall out of the bowl of chips. This ends up where, like, every superhero is trying to save this fucking baby, and then eventually the baby is falling off the side of the building, and Porcupine, without thinking, because he likes this fucking kid, he jumps off of the building after him and grabs him, and then, like, Spider-Man webs him up to save him, and... She's like, what the fuck were you thinking? You can't fly, like, you both would have died. And he's like, Well, no, because I just figured, you know, we're in a room with a bunch of superheroes. Like, everything would have been fine. Like, one of them would have saved us.
So, and it's that display that everybody, that Porcupine wins everybody over, basically.
Yeah, he wins everybody over, and they hug with the baby in between them, and oh, that's cute. And then her, Yurik, and Captain Marvel, they all go downstairs, like, to watch TV and chill while the party's still going on upstairs. And they're like, shouldn't we, like, go back to the party? And she's like, oh, no, I got everything I need here. And they'll leave when all the wine's gone anyway.
Which brings up the point, then why throw the party in the first place?
Well, because she thought that she needed their approval. But then once, you know, everything that happened, she realized she didn't give a shit what they think. She just cares what her good friends think. The people who accepted him before she made an effort for them to accept.
Yeah,
which is like two people, yeah. But still.
It's a fairly decent send off. My only real criticism of this is, I know you didn't read the last issue, and I felt like the last issue was a much stronger way to end this title.
Well, I thought this was good in that it, well, I mean, it, did they establish he had powers in the last issue?
No, but I think what you want to use as a bookend for this series is basically, at the end of the last issue, they show Jessica kissing Porcupine again, and they've clearly defeated the Hobgoblin. That's pretty much how the last book ended, and I feel like, okay, if you were going to end this series, I feel like...
Well, this was an epilogue then. And that's fine. You can do that.
Yeah, but for me, it's like you had such a strong finish. It's like why do you need to fill to tack something on? It's to me, it's like Lord of the Rings. It's like it had the million endings, and it's like you could have just picked one.
They establish Porcupine, her, and the baby as like a unit, and Porcupine or her and the baby both have superpowers. I mean, that's what they got across. So if they bring them back now. Presumably, Porcupine will be involved.
If anything, I felt
the
like
baby will have powers.
If anything, if they had another issue to resolve a lot of stuff, I felt like you needed to resolve the fact that Porcupine had been ignoring his own daughter. I felt like you could have done something.
Well, this isn't Porcupine. The book is Spider Woman.
Well, then if that's the case, then I feel like the last issue should have been the finale then, because this is just tacked on, and I think it diminishes the ending of the last issue. The best example I can think of, like I mentioned earlier, is just the million endings to Return of the King. It's like, okay, you didn't need all the endings.
And well, if anything, fair enough.
It detracted from the way it ended in the last issue. All right, Thunderbolts issue 11, writer Jim Zub, art by Joan Mallon.
In the last issue, she had sent Bucky back to World War II times, and he was a kid again. So he's going through, but things are a little different. And we eventually find out the thing is different is that this is the current past she has created where, Cap is an agent of Hydra.
Mm-hmm.
So various things happen and then it works up to the point where, he gets strapped to the drone plane that would lead to Cap being frozen in ice and him being Winter Soldier. And, Cap comes to talk to him. He's like, hey, listen, cause at that point he realizes like he's working with Zemo and he's like, but what is it? And he explains to him like, yeah, I've been working for Hydra all along. He's like, cause they're going to make the world a better place. He's like, listen, Buck, you can live. All you have to do is say, Hail Hydra.
Oh, the part like, that I thought that was most screwed up is when they showed Kobach, and Kobach was just like, Hydra's, you know, Hydra's a force for good. Just join us. Just say Hail Hydra and you won't die.
Yeah, she told him so he goes through and he dies. Like Cap lets him die because he wouldn't go with Hydra. So Cap lets him die, but she saves him at the last minute. She's like, no, you messed it up. She's like, you were supposed to say Hail Hydra and then everything would be fixed. And he's like, what do you mean fixed? And that's when he's arguing with her.
Yeah, who's teaching you all this? And she saw,
yeah,
oh, Mr. Smith.
Yeah, she's like referring to, you know, Red Skull's like, you know, fake name, and it's he never brings up, like, that's Red Skull.
And didn't I tell you this, that her relationship with Red Skull was going to wind up being stronger than the one with Bucky? Because their relationship is like a brother and sister, but Red Skull acts like her father.
Well, she did point out, she's like, they didn't want me to do this. Like, I'm trying to bring you into the club. I think she even referred to it as the secret club. I'm trying to bring you into the secret club because I like you so much. And he's trying to convince her, like, no, these people are evil. Like, you can't be doing this. You have to set it all back. And then she gets kind of creepy, and she's like, I can put you back there to where you were going to explode. Oh, God, I can kill you forever.
That's so
unsettling. And it's like, but she's, the thing is, she's like, yeah, she's a cosmic cube, but she's also a 5-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
And 5-year-olds are fucking creepy as shit. Cause they don't think about other people. Like, they just think about what they want.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally bought that a 5-year-old would say something like that. And it comes off really creepy, but that's what it was. So. Yeah, but I mean, this was called Thunderbolts, but this is totally a Bucky book. Nobody else is even in it. it was him and Kobik.
Let's be honest, from day one, that's what this book's always been kind of been. Like, the Thunderbolts
the
are
entire,
there.
The entire last two issues were about, what's her balls? Come back to the team. And there are the issues before that were about, Thinker and Atlas dicking around. Like, they have done stuff with the other characters. It's Bucky's team. He put them together. But they have been doing stuff with the other characters. They haven't, like, shrimped on development.
Yeah, but to me, the focal character of this has always been Bucky.
Well, yeah, he's the leader. But, I mean, this issue was literally only him.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure this book is not long for this world, and this is their way of slowly winding this book down.
Well, it also means Bucky knows now.
Yeah. They're setting that up for the future, too, as far as when we finally get Secret Empire, they're going to do the gimmick where Bucky knows, so.
Yeah.
But as I predicted, she's going to go with Schmidt over Bucky.
Unless she fucks his head up and makes him forget.
That would be an interesting direction as well. I don't know what they're ultimately going to decide to do.
It reestablishes the status quo, but.
All right, our final Marvel book, Thanos Issue 5, under Jeff Lemire, art by Mike Diodato.
Art was fucking great in this book.
Yep.
It was a great last issue, too, though.
Couldn't be bothered to draw Old Man Logan this week, but luckily drew Thanos.
We didn't get a reveal in this book, as I recall. Did we?
As far as...
Oh, wait. No, we did. What they found in Terrax's ship. What did they find?
I don't think they did find anything in Terrax's ship.
Well, no, that was the whole point of the story. They went, I'm forgetting now what they found. This is one of the first books I read. They needed to get on Terrax's ship because Thane said there was something on there that would, or there was someone there that would tell them how they could kill Thanos. So they had Star Fox go in, and he basically distracted Terrax long enough for them to sneak into his ship.
My favorite is there's a part where I think it's Nebula is talking to I think Champion, and Nebula's like, "Yeah, Star Fox can't stall forever. I mean, eventually he's gotta stop talking, right?" And then she looks directly at her. He's like, "Are we talking about the same Star Fox here?"
And the funny thing is, he did keep him distracted for a while, but I mean, he fucking Terrax knew something was up from go. Like, he wasn't really fooled by this whole thing, but he did buy him enough time. And, I fucking wish I could remember.
I remember exactly what it is. And, Lemire must be pretty tight with Hickman. Cause what do they find on Terrax's ship? But a phoenix egg.
Oh yeah, they found the phoenix egg, and he's gonna, Thane said he needed that, and then he could stop, he could stop us if he had the phoenix powers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just shocked because I'm like, the fucking phoenix egg? They're bringing that back?
That's why I said what I said. I'm like, at least somebody remember that storyline.
Hey, he's like, hey, I can use this. Nobody else is.
All he needs to do now is bring up Nation X now.
No, Nation X never happened at all. It's just
Secret Wars. Secret Wars.
Secret Wars. It, but legitimately, it never happened. So.
I still love that everybody continues to do nothing with that. It's like, hey, Nation X, it's kind of a cool idea, huh? Nation just X-Men. No, we're going to do nothing with it.
Yeah, we're not going with that. It's no buys.
it's no buys indeed.
Nation X is no buys.
All right, we got three books left. I'll let you decide where we go. Cinema Purgatorio, Lazarus, or Generation Zero?
Lazarus is my favorite of all these, but...
Then you can maybe you can explain to me what happened in that book then, because it's been
you
forever.
You didn't understand what happened in the book?
It's been forever since we read Lazarus.
Okay.
You expect to remember all, we read dozens of the books. One of, you remember what happened like months ago?
They had taken over basically Eastern Europe. Mm-hmm. A combination of the Carlyle, the Murray, the Bittner, and another one of the families had kind of joined together because they were fighting Hawk, and Hawk had teamed up with, I can't remember the family's name. It's a new family. They had teamed up with them, like all the families joined together on different sides, and they're going to war. So they were having problems in the war because one of these families has Lazarus that is different from the other Lazaruses. Like, he's not like a normal person who they can bring back to life. He's like a big fucking giant monster guy.
It's like a giant caveman. And even Lazarus has a problem finding this guy.
Yeah, who they said basically they send in to. Now, Father Carlyle, he had stated that, well, you don't really want to go after this guy because he's not that much of a threat. He's more of a distraction. However, they sent fucking four Lazaruses. The Morays apparently turned on the Carlyles because Joachim stabbed Forever in the back, literally stabbed her in the back during the fight. And he didn't want to, but he's like, he's less human than her. He's like more robot-y. Mm-hmm. And they like overrode his programming and had him stab her.
Oh yeah, he didn't willingly do it. Like, yeah, he even mentioned, I think, he like did like a voiceover, and it was clearly to put over the fact that he was more machine, more robotic.
Yeah. So, so they had that. And then the other story was, Forever and her sister are trying to kind of work together to oust her dad. Cause once Forever found out she's basically grown in a lab, she wasn't cool with daddy anymore. So, she was working with her sister to try to get her dad ousted and get her sister in power. But for her sister to do this, she has to make it so Forever doesn't have to take the mind control drugs, the loyalty drugs anymore. Mm-hmm. So she hooked up with that black kid who was like the super genius who they let, work for the family. And she sent him to Stanford, which they control, and he is supposed to work on a way to make it so that she doesn't have to take those drugs, but they can't detect it. And he came up with like a first pass at it where he said, I haven't tested this. It might not work. If it does work, it won't work for long, but it might work temporarily. Mm-hmm. He's like, but it can be detected. Like if they really look for it, it can be detected. And, the problem is they're really looking for it. Like we saw that because the father doesn't believe she's actually taking the drugs again. So they apparently are looking deep into it and they're going to find out. And the theory is if they find out, then, you know, her sister's kind of fucked and so is this guy, and that would be bad. Now, interesting note I got when I was reading the back of this. After the five pages trashing Trump and everyone who voted for him. So that's you.
Hey now.
I'm just saying. Just saying. Rucka went on a fucking rant, the likes of which I've never seen. The artist then cut in and he goes, so he went a little off the rails here, but I have something to announce. I need a break from Lazarus. He goes, I am.
Is it related to all the stuff that you just said?
No. Cause I think he agrees with him. Like, Ruck has always been like he's a left guy. Mm-hmm. He always has been. He doesn't hide it. He never has. That's fine. I think he's a very talented writer. I don't mind. I'm okay with reading things by people who, you know, believe in statism, but,
wow. Let's just move on. We're not gonna go into that now.
It's okay. Hey, I didn't vote for Trump, so it's okay.
I'm saying there's a time and place and ripping into other people's politics.
I wasn't ripping him. I was saying I don't care. Status. Jesus. That he's a statist. I don't care. Cause he's a good writer, but, his artist, who is the co-creator of the book, said, I need a break from Lazarus. He's like, the reason this book was late was because I'm writing Lazarus and the book is in Europe. So I had to spend a bunch of time looking up, European gun brands and what they look like and all this shit. He's like, I put a shit ton of work into this book and I have been doing nothing but Lazarus for X amount of time. He goes, I'm not the kind of artist who can draw, you know, my creator owned book. And then, you know, I go and I do fill in work or I do a couple issues for another company and then I can come back. He's like, what I do on Lazarus, I dedicate myself to 100% and I'm frankly burnt out. So they're doing a 5-issue mini series, which, Rucka is writing it, but he's, you know, him as the co-creator is still going to have a lot of input into it. But it's going to be 5 comics about 5 different characters who, they didn't say which characters, but 5 different characters who are already in the Lazarus books, or who have been in the books, but each one is going to have a different artist. So they're doing that, and then they're going to do 2 more of the, like they did the Carlisle source book and they're going to do a Hawk one and then they're going to do one of this other family that we don't know anything about. So they're still going to be putting stuff out in the world for the next 5-6 months, but they're basically just giving the artist a chance to take a break because he needs a break. He said he's over this right now. He can't do anymore.
He's not like most artists.
Yeah, who take just what they're given. Like a pretty little princess.
Are you referring to Michael Lark as a pretty princess?
He might be. I don't know. maybe that's what he wants to be.
Hey, we're not judging.
Yeah.
His art's certainly good enough to where, you know, you can do whatever you need to do on your own.
Like, I'll let him, you know. I can deal with a brand. I mean, I've always said of Lazarus, I find the world interesting and he doesn't have a lot of chances to do world building. So anything that gives Rucka a chance to build up his world a little more.
And let's be honest here. I had to have you explain to me a lot what was going on this. Cause obviously this is Lazarus. There's a lot of moving parts. The fact that they took this huge time off, I forgot a lot of the stuff. I'm glad we're gonna get a book that helps me anyway, keeps me in this world, cause it is in fact a very complicated world, but it's still a good, great title. But
yeah.
this title, it's not really a weakness when you read the title, but the weakness of the book is, if it takes any time off, I start to forget stuff.
Yeah, and that's understandable.
I mean, yet, like I said, there's a lot of moving parts, there's a lot of characters. I know the main movers and shakers, but there's characters here. Even I was like, wait, I don't remember who this is. All right. That's our one title from Image. Obviously, writer Greg Rucka, art by Mark Millar. Let's move on to Valiant Entertainment with Generation Zero, Issue 4, or Issue 8, I should say. I'm sorry. And writer Fred Van Lente and artist Diego Bernard. Yeah, I know. This too is a book where there's a lot to unpack.
Okay, but the basics were Kwame, the girl's brother, and one of the twins escaped from the HeroScape. We've covered this book before. I'm not going to explain what the fucking HeroScape is. They escaped and they went at the evil. Well, I guess he's not totally evil. They went after the guy who's running the town.
Mm-hmm.
The dad and his daughter, they like drove off to, I guess she was taking him to the tower. They tried to tease that she actually has superpowers, but I don't think she does because this, I think her name was Raza or something. All of the things in this town are created via her dreams, mm-hmm. sort of. So that's all the things they use. The Generation Zero team is getting the shit kicked out of them by the evil company owner of the town's daughter, who he put a experimental vest on that would give her superpowers, mm-hmm. which led to her throwing cows.
That was awesome.
Just repetitively. Oh, my favorite part
was she's like when she does the Iron Man slash Superman descent to the ground.
Oh yeah, and she punches the ground. She always wanted to do it.
She's like, I always wanted to do that. So cool.
Yeah. Well, apparently her dad informed her. She hung up on him, but he informed her that vest you're wearing hasn't really been tested on humans, and it turns out it can cause like massive mood swings and instability, and then she hangs up on him because she's clearly kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. So, that's a problem, but she beat the shit out of all of them, almost killed Cloud, their telepath, smacked him around with ease, actually. But then she ended up flying off to go chase girl and her dad. And dad got incapacitated after she finally hit his car with a cow. But she was, the main girl was able to crawl away and she, encountered, Raza, the girl who's supposed to be asleep. She's kind of floating around. Looked like she was still sleeping, but she appeared before her. So apparently we're going to get a resolution to this in the next issue.
Hopefully. I like these characters, but the storyline is getting way, way longer than the tooth.
Yeah, and it's like, it came off kind of like a letdown, like the corner men are working for him, basically. What they explained were the corner men were like, they were like, the protectors of the HeroScape, and they attack anything that could hurt it. Mm-hmm. So what they were saying was they're not really evil. They think they're doing the correct thing. So, but they don't really have any control over what they do. Like, they're not thinking things. They compared them to antibodies. Like, they attack any threat.
I did find it interesting because up until this point, I was under the impression that the father was just a cop and didn't know.
No, he went to this town. He knows everything that's going on, but he went to this town because, you know, Kwame has, he's got whatever's wrong with him. He's special needs and he couldn't afford to send him to the type of school he needs. And then his daughter is like really smart and he couldn't afford to send her to a good school. And he thought he didn't want to waste by sending her to like public school, he said. So he got offered this job from this guy, and, you know, the money was great, and it had everything he could possibly want for his kids. So he basically did it all for his kids. So he's a good guy, even though he tried to murder other children. Although in this, he would not shoot the boss's daughter at first. He's like, she's like, come on, Dad, you got to shoot her. He's like, she's a young girl. I'm not going to shoot her. And then, you know, she threw another cow at him. He's like, all right, I'm going
to
shoot her.
Yeah, because she was throwing cows at them, but, you know, she's not used to the strength. So she's missing them, but she's like, eventually I'm going to have to hang on this. And then eventually she hits the car.
Yeah. Shooting her didn't really hurt her.
As you probably wouldn't have expected, yeah.
Yeah.
So, like I said, I like these characters. I like the premise. The story really started out pretty good, but we're 8 issues in. We're still dealing with the same story. I'm looking forward to a new arc because these characters are great.
Wrap it up.
Hopefully it wraps up pretty soon. All right. Speaking of wrapping things up, let's wrap things up, at least as far as this week's books are concerned, with Avatar Press's Cinema Purgatorio Issue 9. And you know the gimmick where we do this? Obviously, it's a anthology book, so our first story from Alan Moore is Cinema Purgatorio, artist Kevin O'Neill.
This was the weakest Cinema Purgatorio story, and I'm going to tell you why. He flat out just told a story about early Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
There was no creepiness to it.
There was this bat that they kept alluding to, and you were hoping it was...
That's an old movie character. That's what Batman was based off of.
Yeah, and I was hoping that was going to wind up being something, you know, sinister and dark, because that's what he'd been doing up until now.
The theme of it was he represented death. And the point of the story was sometimes death just kind of happens, and it doesn't mean anything, because this actress... you know, this is all real story. He's been doing this a lot lately. It was better in the last issue, though. She was young, and she died of carbon monoxide poisoning. And they ruled it a suicide, but then they said, oh, she's kind of hanging out with some shady people. Let's look at it. And they reopened. I know this because I watched that fucking that show with that really Brooklyn guy that used to be on E. I don't remember what it was called.
E2 Hollywood Story? This.
I think that was, yeah, that was it. Yeah, this was on that. So this is how I know about this. They actually, the jury when they voted, the jury when they talked about the case said, okay, it's probably a suicide, but the cops should look into it. So the cops did like 6 weeks on this case, and they could find absolutely nothing that showed foul play. Like, the worst thing could happen was she probably went down to her car in the garage, started it, was drunk, fell asleep, and died. But there was no evidence that anybody did anything to kill her. And, like, that was the story. They even mentioned that in, you know, Moore mentioned that in the story where he's like, well, sometimes death just kind of happens and we always want to look for the more scandalous version of it, but sometimes death is just death.
Yep. I felt like up until now, we'd obviously, the last issue, we got the sort of the over the top explanation of the creator of, what was it?
Felix the Cat.
Felix the Cat. And obviously he had fun with it. Whereas this was just flat out, he was just explaining something that happened in real life. And that's fine and all, but that's not really what we've grown accustomed to with the Cinema Purgatorio book.
Yeah, but luckily some of the other stories I enjoyed much more.
Like Code Prue by Garth Ennis and art by Raul Cazares.
Code Prue showed what they do with zombies in the Code Prue world, which we were informed shooting them in the head doesn't do anything.
If you burn them, all you'll do is send what made them zombies in the first place. You'll just expose it to more people.
Yeah, so that's bad. They
You can't send them to the bottom of the ocean.
They're not particularly dangerous because what they said was the zombies, they decompose at a normal rate. So, a lot of them can't see and they can't think because their brains decompose too. And they're just not, like, even the biting, like, they said it's instinctual. Like, you have to get really fucking close to them for them to even do it. So you can't really do anything to them. So what they do is they take them to a, like, a locked room in the bottom of, like, an abandoned part of the sewers, and they just kind of shove them in the room and then close the door.
And that's it. I thought this was great. This was fun. I'm glad now that this has pretty much been reduced to an anthology book because I feel like it tells its story very quickly. It gets the gimmick over and then it's over. And I feel like this is the book that's most benefited by being an anthology.
Yeah, because some of the other ones, like, you want more story, like The Vast, which I really like.
I love Modded. I think that
I like Modded now. I didn't like it at first.
Yeah, I think that is strong enough to where it, eventually if this ends, I wouldn't mind if that became a standalone series.
Yeah, but I mean, those books, they have a continuing story. So you get 5 pages of story and then it ends and you're like, oh fuck, I want to know what happens next. With Code Prue, Ennis is telling like 5-6 page stories that end in 6 pages.
Well, because the whole thing is supposed to be, it's Prue, right? That's the name of our main protagonist in this.
Yeah.
She's basically what? She's an EMT for like the supernatural, right?
Yes.
And basically every issue deals with another aspect of the supernatural. And
yeah,
that actually is really strengthened being an anthology.
Mm-hmm.
Where some of the other books would probably benefit to being their own solo titles. One of them not being A More Perfect Union, which another book that excels from being included in an anthology because almost nothing happened this issue.
Well, no, something happened. They, at the last issue, they found out that the things they fought off were the scouts and then the actual army of the giant fucking antscape, and they all had to run and damn near everyone died. But as they're running back, artillery shells start going down and blowing the fucking ants to shit, but also killing the guys
mm-hmm.
who are running back. And he runs up to General Robert E. Lee. And he's like, oh, sir, I'm reporting we made it back. And he's like, well, assemble your division. He's like, my division is fucking dead. They're all dead.
So they all died valiantly, but this is it.
And they're bathed in honor. And he goes, no amount of honor makes up for the fucking death of this many people, you prick. And he walks away.
Wow.
Cause they basically sacrificed those guys to draw the ants their way so that they could shell them.
It makes sense, but I understand where he's coming from as far as, you know, we lost a lot of good men, but I guess in the grand scheme, it sort of made sense.
Well, the Civil War, famously was, you know, a shit ton of people died in that war,
mm.
and they did some fucked up shit. So this is just that, but with ants.
Yep. All right, let's move on to our next, anthology with Modded by Karen Gillian and Anau Lopez.
So in the last issue, they had invited our sweet main character down to drink with them. And at one point they asked her name.
she's scrambling around. She's like, oh, my name?
She's just looking at things in the room.
Glass, hat,
dildo beast. And then one of them goes, glass hat, dildo beast?
She's like, yes, lady glass hat, dildo beast.
Yes, lady glass hat, dildo beast. Well, things, I couldn't tell if things were going good for her or not. They, debatable. She excused herself to the bathroom. And they were talking about it. And, like, one of the guys is like, oh, I think she's nice. They're just trying to figure out, like, she won a fight she should not have won.
Mm-hmm.
And she's trying to play it off like, oh, yeah, I modded that thing. That was all me. And then her the girl who's helping her out to get Fluff Bumble back, she showed up and was talking mad shit to her and, like, grabbed her away, said that she stole her creature.
She basically is like, I'm cool with helping you out here, but I still have a reputation.
Yeah, and she's like, I'm trying to give you a rep. And he's like, but he doesn't really seem to like you. And she's like, yeah, I'm giving you a rep as a person who I hate. That'll help you out. That'll benefit you. Cause I'm badass. And, but she gets mad at her. So she's going to fight her. And but I think it's a part of the game they're running. But yeah. So at the end of this, she calls up her monster and she's going to fight her. Lady glass hat dildo beast.
Is it too late to change my Wrestling Observer message board name?
To Lady Glass or Mr. Glass at Dildo Beast.
Mm-hmm. Or just
it's pretty,
like,
it's a pretty good name.
Or like you often see, you know, Lady Mastermind, you have Mastermind, so presumably it'd just be Glass Hat Dildo Beast. I don't know if that'd be cool with Toss though.
So, oh, they don't really follow the Toss anymore.
Oh yeah, you told me Thug's back.
Thug censored. Oh, by the way, we have a summary of the chants directed at Roman in his 12-minute segment.
That was amazing.
Fuck you, Roman. You suck. Delete. Asshole. Roman sucks. Go away and shut the fuck up.
The best part, and obviously we're going to go back to our review real quickly, but I watched that live, and you could tell he was just waiting for them to tire themselves out.
And they never did.
And as soon as he would hold the mic up to his mouth, they would start booing or chanting something again. Oh, he's amazing. All right. The Vast by Christos Gage, art by Gabriel Andretti.
This is two pages long. This felt like the shortest fucking...
Six pages, actually.
They went to the place where her, I don't know if it was her boyfriend or fiance was. And she saw his dead body, and she is so angry that she pulls a gun on her little monster. This fucking thing is so cute. I can't believe she put a gun on it. She pulls a gun on it, and it looks at her, and it's like, and it's like reaching for her. And then eventually she doesn't shoot it, and she like grabs it and hugs it. And then she was talking to the handler, and she's like, well, you didn't stop me. He's like, yeah, I was... You're going through your own shit. You had to do it there. And she's like, well, what would you have done if I would have shot it? He's like, I would have shot you.
And he's like, well, if anything, the thing's probably got a hard enough shell to probably just deflect the bullet. She's like, wouldn't that have killed me? It's like, well, if that wouldn't have killed you, I would have put
two in your head. So, yeah.
It was six pages, but it read really quick. Yeah. Usually you get a lot more from The Vast, and I felt like, I know you're a big fan of this, but this was kind of a nothing story.
Well, they were going for the big emotional thing. And but due to the brevity of the story, they had to resolve it really freaking quick. And they did. And then by that point, since he has so few pages, he couldn't do anything else. Like, it's like, okay, well, that's done with.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's books. Let's move on to our final segment this week, next week's books.
That's so bad.
Is that Urs the Cat Miller in the background? The one who's doing, not obviously not the chorus, but...
No, because he wasn't in the company yet.
Now I'm just racist. I hope you're happy.
A little bit.
All right, let's pull up comic list and let's look at next week's books as we wrap this up.
I can't believe this. We have two books from Avatar.
Oh, what? Are one of them the best horror comic 12? Of all time?
Providence number 12.
Paga.
Uber Invasion number 5.
It's got to be a record.
Yeah, two books from that little tiny company.
Little engine that could.
Yeah. Aquaman number 20.
Already down to DC, I see.
Yep. Batman number 20. I Am Bane finale. Justice League 18. Shade the Changing Girl 7. Superman number 20. A Superman Reborn Aftermath tie-in, but also Superman Black Part 1. That is not about a black Superman.
Oh, it's not about Grant Morrison's Multiversity Superman?
No, the President. President Superman.
Or Shaquille O'Neal?
No, it is this is not about Steel. Shazam.
Shaq Fu.
What movie, or is it a commercial that, you know that animated GIF where like Shaq is like making the funny face and he does the shake and then they go to the cat?
I don't think that's a commercial, dude. I think that's just a GIF someone made.
Oh, but where's the... him doing that from.
I don't
is
know.
Is it from Shazam?
Well, I really don't know. I can
tell. I gotta, that is one of the greatest things on the internet. I absolutely love it. Right. Image has some number one, so I'm reading about them.
Seeing what creative are on them. I predict, probably not any good.
I don't want to read any of those. Walking Dead, 166.
It's
all new Wolverine, 19.
It's usually easier when there's only one new number one from Image, but when there's a bunch of them, it's like, forget it.
Are we reading America number 2?
Let's put that in the maybe pile, because that's so bad I kind of want to read it.
Okay. Avengers number 6. Champions number 7. Hawkeye number 5. Jessica Jones number 7.
You were just putting that over.
Nova number 5. Royals number 1. See how that goes.
Hopefully good.
Spider-Man 15. Uncanny Avengers 22. X-Men Gold number 1. A week of much more Marvel.
Cause you know, we've been so enthralled with all the Marvel stuff, right?
I know. That's the end, by the way. That's all the books.
Alright, let's see how many titles we're at and let's figure out if we're gonna add
80.
It's not 80, I can assure you it's not 80. It's not even 20, it's 18 books.
Okay.
Do you want to add America or no?
No. 18's enough.
I think I'll read it and I'll report back to you, and if it's particularly bad.
It's probably better.
Yeah. Alright, I think that's gonna do it for this week's show then. Alright, so from all of us at halfguard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show, and as always, check you guys out next week. Adios.
We go on all day, all night. All my brows out of people who be ready to fight. Say yeah.
Yeah! 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 That's what the folks were doing at Raw.
Yeah, I have to see what the lyrics are.
It's not a super complicated song to understand.
Oh, it's all my proud southern people.
What did you think they were saying?
I didn't know.
All my proud southern people, let them know that you're with me. Go hard, all day, all night. All my proud southern people.
Yeah, they're great.